the state of Palestine.
Pitiful, surely. In other news, ID cards or digital ID for 13-year-olds. Shadow Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, Conservative Helen Watley, told LBC.
We don't agree with moving to the kind of culture where people might be stopped in the street and asked to show their ID, a kind of papers, please, society.
Plus, the wife of McFly star Harry Judd says one of their children has demand avoidance, which means they can never be told off. Is there such a thing? Those stories are more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Israeli government has approved Donald Trump's Gaza plan for a ceasefire and hostage-prisoner exchange. The deal will see Israeli troops pull back to an agreed-upon line within 24 hours. Questions about the future of Hamas and the governance of Gaza remain. Israeli government spokesman David Mentzer has told LBC that Hamas has been greatly diminished.
Hamas are no longer able to wage the war which they waged upon us 2 years ago, almost to the day. Now, we, of course, here in Israel, you know, this has come at a huge sacrifice to our people, to our nation, to our national psyche.
The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says European countries will be strongly playing their part in the Gaza peace process. She's been taking part in a meeting of her European counterparts hosted by President Macron in Paris. Ms. Cooper will be speaking to Nick in the next hour. The UK's terror law watchdogs told LBC he is investigating the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Prosecutors say they had to drop the case because they couldn't obtain evidence labelling Beijing a national security threat. Downing Street has strongly rejected claims it spiked the prosecution. Jonathan Hall KC says China is a security threat and the explanation given is inadequate.
I personally find it confusing, and I do think that when something like this happens, the public and everyone who was looking at this to say, well, how is the UK going to treat this sort of behaviour by China, deserves a much fuller explanation.
A man who was held in connection with the Manchester synagogue terror attack has been rearrested. The 30-year-old was detained at Manchester Airport yesterday afternoon. England eased to a 3-0 friendly win against Wales at Wembley last night. Scotland fought back for a 3-1 victory against Greece in their World Cup qualifier. And it is Global's Make Some Noise Day. All of our stations, including Classic FM, Heart and Gold, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like 9-year-old Max, whose mum was diagnosed with cancer. He got the chance to spend some time with other children in a similar situation through a group called WOLO, funded by Global's Make Some Noise.
I felt really sad. WOLO helped me. Got to spend time with loads of people who've been through the same thing.
And thank you, because so far you've helped us to raise £755,492. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 95.09. It closed down 39 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern parts of the country. Sunny spells developing later on. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
That's the delicious sound of a Tesco Finest salt-aged pork crackling joint. At Tesco, we know what makes crackling perfectly crispy. Our pork joints are salt-aged with pink Himalayan rock salt to ensure the crackling is as golden and as crisp as can be. Do you want to hear that again?
I thought you might.
It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Tesco, every little helps. Available in selected larger stores.
LBC's Make Some Noise Day.
Right now, across the country, there are so many people going through unimaginably difficult times. Our official charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support those people facing life's toughest challenges. One of the people who has already benefited from your donations is 14-year-old Maya, who was having a difficult time at school.
The struggles in school really started towards the end of year 8. Found myself getting in trouble in school and struggling to have anyone understand what I was kind of going through. And then in year 9, it became more of a struggle, as in my mental health. Like, I wanted to concentrate in school, but it was just so hard because of friendships or relationships with teachers. It was just really hard. And having no one to talk to, it was much harder that way because everything's just kind of bottled up. Since Youth Action Alliance, I've had teachers come up to me and say, "You've really changed." And it's just the fact that my hard work is being recognised is the best thing.
Make Some Noise helps people like Maya by funding projects that give them a mentor to guide them through improving their behaviour and give them the space to express their feelings. They wouldn't get that help if it wasn't for your generosity. Just £20 could send a support pack to a family like Amanda and Kobe, who've just found out their baby has a serious heart condition, helping them to connect with others and not feel so alone in their lowest moments. To donate £30, £20 or £10, text LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 without a space to 70766. That's 70766. 100% of your donation will go to LBC's Make Some Noise. 16 and over only. Please seek bill payers' permission. Standard network charges may apply. T's and C's are at makesomenoise.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
It's 6 minutes after seven on Friday, the 10th of October. How to achieve what seemed the unachievable? You get Donald Trump involved in his unique style. We are inching towards peace in the Middle East. I'll be looking at the aspects of what the United Kingdom and indeed the whole of Europe brought. Recognition for Hamas got them nowhere. Threatening to look the other way and allowing Israel to unleash whatever it chose seemed to have brought them to the negotiating table. And what of those protests going on, of course, for 2 years? The reality is they are to continue, so I'll be telling you they're not about a pro-Palestine aspect. They're because people hate Israel and want to see it fail. In other news, as one newspaper investigation finds, the extraordinary rate at which cyclists are going through red lights, almost at the rate of about 3 a minute, and I think it's worse. What is the reality? Well, there's only one way to find out.
I'm LBC's Henry Riley, and I'm at the Gray's Inn Road junction in Holborn, counting how many cyclists think red means go.
In other news, is there such a thing as demand avoidance? The wife of one pop star says their child has it, which means they can never tell the child off. What is the reality of that? And staying with children, the need to get them off their phones and their parents too. We need to spend less time on our phones, particularly at family occasions such as meals. This has been heralded by the Princess of Wales, and not for the first time, Kate is great and on the message. But here's Dr. Sanjeev Lichani, consultant paediatrician at the University Hospitals of Leicester.
Whilst children are at home with their parents, is the time to start trying to reduce the amount of screen time and social media use.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
24 hours ago, it was the news that many of us were waking up to. We've now had, of course, a day, 24 hours, to bed it in. And it does seem ever closer. He has done it. Of course, I'm going to caveat at all times with, we still have to see the hostages returned, and sadly, the remains of some of the hostages. We still need to see the hostages or prisoners released from the other side, and we still need to greet the line to which the IDF will withdraw. But everything is going positively. And as I said, this was just over 24 hours ago, the news has reverberated around the world.
Looking at the future with a clean slate, so to speak, as much as possible, again, acknowledging all the strength that we've seen emerging through those dark times. And let the sun shine in. I think that this day is the beginning.
There is hope this perhaps can be a significant step toward bringing this devastating conflict to an end. The final pieces of this deal coming together in a remarkable few moments.
Everyone will be hoping that this is a significant breakthrough and one, crucially, that can last. We've seen that ceasefire at the start of the year, which fell through in the end, and then an even more fierce war happened in Gaza.
You heard coverage across Canadian and Australian news networks. Now, many have argued, and if you read some of the what are called leader columns in the newspapers, that this wouldn't have been achievable without Donald Trump.
and it's not been particularly helped by UK Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. Critics point to his decision last month to recognise Palestine as a state, along with Emmanuel Macron and other leaders as well, without demanding the release of the hostages.
As Prime Minister of this great country, that the United Kingdom formally recognises the state of Palestine. We recognise the state of Israel more than 75 years ago as a homeland for the Jewish people. Today, we join over 150 countries who recognise a Palestinian state also.
Now, if you were listening at the time, you will recall I questioned the wisdom of that, and I had the opportunity to put that directly to the Prime Minister at the end of last month at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool.
The return of the hostages is an absolute demand that we've been
yes,
making
but it wasn't
since
included in your recognition.
The very start that the hostages should be returned immediately. I've said that
but
on every occasion.
But, it wasn't
occasion.
A condition of your recognition.
No,
some would say you rewarded terrorism.
No, I completely reject that.
Go ahead.
Because the two-state solution that I believe in is a two-state solution in which Hamas has absolutely no part in governance. It is the opposite of what Hamas says. It's not rewarding Hamas, it's writing them out of the future. They do not believe in a two-state solution. This is the precise opposite of what Hamas says. They're a terrorist organisation, and we need to be calling them out as that. But they should release the hostages, and they should play no part in governing in Palestine in the future.
Compare and contrast with President Trump. Let's listen just briefly again to the president on Fox News yesterday.
The world has come together around this deal, and that's something I would say that without that wouldn't happen. I think you're going to see people getting along, and you'll see Gaza being rebuilt. We're forming a council that the Council of Peace, we think it's going to be called, and it's going to be very powerful, and it's going to really, I think to a large extent, it's going to have a lot to do with the whole Gaza situation. People are going to be taken care of. We'll be involved in it, but the big thing is hostages are going to be released. It's probably our time would be probably Monday.
Well, that was President Trump. Look, I want to put this with the biggest caveat imaginable. I hope we see the events over the weekend take place as is scheduled. I hope. And if they do, what do we make of the UK's role? Let's start first with Stuart now, Lord Polak, who's Honorary President of the Conservative Friends of Israel, and joins me from Israel now. Thank you very much. You must be a very busy individual. I appreciate your time. How would you characterise the response and the work of the British government, Lord Polak? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Well, yes, I'm here in Jerusalem, and rather ironically in the same hotel that I was in on October the 7th, 2023.
Good gracious.
And it's the whole juxtaposition of that is really interesting. One of the clips you played just now, Nick, I think says it all. I think the Prime Minister was saying that Hamas should play no part in the future, I think, in one of his statements. The sad thing is that the Brits, we have played no part in getting to where we are today and hopefully this weekend. They are not involved, not at the table. And I find that, having been, you know, involved in British politics for many years, very sad.
I've known you for a number of years, Lord Polak. Can I ask you, is there a sense of embarrassment that the United Kingdom didn't do more for you sitting in Israel today?
Oh, totally. Totally. It's deeply embarrassing. And I have my contacts here in Israel, in the Israeli political system and others. Britain doesn't count. And yet it's bizarre. They think they do. And, you know, I looked in this morning at the Australian newspaper. They're in the same boat. Senator Wong, the foreign minister, has said, I'm quoting here, Labour, this is Labour, of course, in Australia.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Labour's patient, deliberate steps helped Trump secure Gaza peace. They are deluded. And I'm afraid it's the same for the Labour Party and the Labour government here in the UK.
Last question, Stuart. This is a question that's always asked by broadcasters. Can you sum up the mood in Israel this morning?
I think the mood is pensive. They're sort of on the verge of wanting to be excited to see it. But, you know, I've spent the last 24 hours with a young boy, Yaakov Bobot. His brother is one of those hostages who is one of the 20 who they think is alive. But of course, he will only know he's alive when he touches him, hugs him, whenever that happens in the next couple of days. So there's a great hope here. But, you know, it's going to be a long road.
It is.
And the last thing I will say to you, Nick, is yes, when sir. The Prime Minister in India said yesterday that we have played our part behind the scenes, is just a nonsense. They've not done anything. And when he was asked, by the way, too, in his press conference yesterday, which he wouldn't answer, whether President Trump should be given the Nobel Peace Prize, he wouldn't answer. I absolutely think what President Trump has done is quite amazing. Long road, even after whatever happens in the next 2 days, but he has made a massive difference, and we are nowhere to be seen.
Stuart, thank you for your time. Let's hope you can watch as those hopes become reality over the weekend. Lord Polak, Honorary President of the Conservative Friends of Israel. It is 7:15. We'll go a little bit late to the news headlines because, of course, we wanted to make you aware of our special charity day. So let's bring to the conversation Oliver McTernan, who's Director and Co-Founder of Forward Thinking. That's a UK organisation focusing on resolution of conflicts in the Middle East. And he's a former hostage negotiator. Good to have you on, sir. How, again, same question, how would you characterise the work, the role, the response of the British Prime Minister? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, to be honest, I think that's an under question. I think... What was the role British Prime Minister played? I think he was, nor was Macron, offered a role in the present lead-up to this agreement or this stage of the ceasefire. From the beginning of this war, Qatar, Egypt were the main negotiators, the main players in the between Israel and Gaza. It was later that Turkey came in, but don't think Europe was offered to play.
Okay, I'm terribly sorry, sir. We're going to have to leave it there because the line is it's distorting and we can't actually make out what you're saying, so I do apologise, Mr. McTernan. Thank you, your director and co-founder of Forward Thinking. We might try and get him back, but certainly we'll take your calls on that. Compare and contrast the roles of the two countries, and I'm going to say, you know how much I love this country, but I have to say, I think it's pretty pitiful if the UK thinks it's achieved pretty much anything. In a related conversation...
Here in Paris, President Macron convened talks with foreign ministers from all over the world to see what they could do to help implement the Gaza peace deal. I'm LBC's Aggie Chambray with all the latest.
17 minutes after 7, let's get to the LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The Israeli government has approved Donald Trump's Gaza ceasefire plan. Fighting should stop in the next 24 hours, followed by an exchange of all remaining hostages and hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has called it a momentous development. LBC weather, cloudy with rain in central and northwestern parts of the UK. Sunny spells developing later on. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are queues of about 3 miles on the M25 clockwise to junction 16 at the M40. It's after an accident where one lane is closed. There are restrictions on the South Circular Road at the Woolwich Ferry roundabout. It's because of an accident, which means there's currently no access to the ferry. In Plaistow, Prince Regent Lane is closed both ways at Crofton Road. That's all down to an accident. In Penge, the High Street remains closed both ways after the fire yesterday. On the trains, Greater Anglia services are now running between Southend, Victoria and Wickford, but there are still delays and cancellations. And better news on the underground, the delays on the Victoria and Metropolitan lines have now cleared.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, we speak werewolf. This one's saying we have British-grown pumpkins and trick-or-treat-ready sweet mixes in store now. Like marshmallows at £1.99 or lollipop mixes £1.69 with Lidl Plus. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Offer ends 15th of October. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead. Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to St. Martin from £679 flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Imagine the very focal lens of the future, personalized to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behavior. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £25 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
What? Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, compare and contrast the role of the United Kingdom with the role of the United States. And sadly, I have to say that what the UK has achieved, or thinks it's achieved, it's pretty pitiful. Catherine, you'll be the first caller on that. Let's quickly tell you the headlines, and understandably, and I would argue quite rightly, headlines around the globe made by the events yesterday. We have peace in the Middle East as the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Excuse me. It will be over by Monday, I promise. I'm going to have a very quiet weekend. I'm not going anything mad. I promise I will not be coughing and spluttering, and I do apologise. We have peace in the Middle East as the front page of the Daily Telegraph with a very big picture of Donald Trump. Blessed is the peacemaker is the front page of the Daily Mail. Trump's peace is the front page of the Daily Express and the Guardian. Celebrations, they can't bring themselves to put Donald Trump on the front page. Celebrations after Hamas and Israel agree first phase of deal. And there are pictures of young Palestinians celebrating in Gaza, which is obviously good news all round. The LBC app has the latest developments. Israel approving the deal, and there is a picture of President Trump. Let's take one other story at random. We need to find something else on one of the websites. Here we go. The Huff Post is calling into question the Victoria Beckham Netflix documentary. They're asking, is it deeply personal or an infuriating waste of time? I have to say, I'm afraid I've not seen it. I haven't even been able to catch up with Traitors yet for various reasons, not least because I go to bed so early trying to get rid of this damn cold. So it'll be a while before I manage to catch up with that one. But there we are. At least we changed the mood a little bit. Right, let's get into the role of the United Kingdom in all of this. Catherine in Hallowell. Thank you for calling, Catherine. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, I actually think it's a good thing that Britain and France have recognised Palestine as a state, and I do think that has had an influence on things. But the reason I called is because I was horrified when you said that Israel had given, quote, Palestine all that it had got. You know, I was very shocked by that gung-ho language. Very shocked by the reality, you know, that the children killed, the hospitals bombed, you know, the place devastated.
Appalling, yes.
But, I mean, that's not give it all you've got. And then you said that it's because Israel did that.
Catherine, why do you think Hamas has stopped doing what Hamas has been doing?
I think it's international pressure from America and from, you know, the Arab states.
Why, after 2 years, did they suddenly yield to the what you call international pressure, would you imagine?
Well, because I think they've been offered a two-state solution. And right. I think America has said that if Israel doesn't stop, they won't arm them anymore.
Do you recall last week when President Trump said to Hamas, if you don't agree with my 20-point plan, I'm going to walk away and I'll leave Israel to do what it chooses? Do you remember that?
Yes.
What dynamic do you think that brought to Hamas?
Well,
I'll tell you what it brought. They realised that, with President Trump, there was no dancing around, there was none of the, I would suggest, appalling appeasement as we witnessed from countries such as France with Emmanuel Macron and the United Kingdom with Keir Starmer. There was someone who is ultimately a businessman. He makes some shocking decisions. I don't support everything that Donald Trump does, but when you're trying to negotiate with terrorists, there's only one thing they know, which is force, and he showed it. Agree this deal, or I'll walk away and Netanyahu can do what he care, do what he wishes, and I won't care. Catherine.
Yes, but that deal includes releasing all the 2,000 hostages that Israel are holding without trial.
Sure.
I mean, surely that's got something to do with it.
That's great. That's great news. And some of them are children, and I think that's fantastic. But don't delude yourself. This is nothing to do with the UK, with France, with Canada, with Australia. That is all nonsense. They're not even bit part players. It is down to one man who, by the way, often does very questionable things, but in this one, it would appear, please God, he's pulled it off. Catherine.
Well, I think he's put pressure on Netanyahu to stop.
I think he's told Hamas that he's coming to the end of the road. Catherine, thank you. Peter's in Stirling. Peter, you're on the radio. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
You've used the word pitiful there to describe our response, but then in that last little bit of comment there in exchange, you kind of summed up my thoughts, which is it's delusional to say that we had any say in this. So we could have condemned Hamas all we liked. We could have gone completely the opposite direction. It wouldn't have mattered one jot. This has always been about the US. So I don't know why anyone's criticising Starmer on that one.
What did his recognition of Palestine achieve?
What would him doing completely the opposite have achieved?
Well, would you answer my question first? And then I'll answer yours.
It brings us into line with the rest of the world.
Not the United States.
No, but it brings us into line with about 90% of the planet. Yeah. I know that the US is the largest military and the biggest economy.
What country has done most of the work to broker this deal?
Well, it's the US because the US have been the ones who have been acting as a shield for Israel. As you know, no one can touch Israel.
So what we hope is a peace is down to the US, who steadfastly refused to recognise a bunch of terrorists as a country, and we yielded. Where does that leave the UK in your view?
Well, I'd like to kind of row back on that point for a second. We recognise Afghanistan. That does not mean we recognise the Taliban as a legitimate government. We recognise the idea of a state of Palestine. That dates back before Hamas seized control.
Yes.
Okay, the PLO and all these other groups and everything. It's been through many hands. So recognising the state of Palestine wasn't a recognition of Hamas, and I know you said that in your introduction.
I wrote
this point completely, but it's not, and it was a horrible conflation.
I'm sorry you disagree with it. That's the way I saw it, and at least I had the opportunity to put it directly to the Prime Minister, and indeed we heard his response. Peter, thank you for that. Come to more of your calls in a moment. Now, let's go to Paris. I've mentioned Emmanuel Macron. He's hosting talks with ministers from European and Arab countries. The British Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, is there, and we'll hear from her, by the way, later in the show. But also, the LBC's political correspondent, Aggie Chambre, is also there, and she joins me now with an update. Aggie, good morning.
Good morning, Nick, from the centre of Paris where these talks took place last night. So the point of these talks, the meeting, was to gather together some of the European and Arab foreign ministers from across the world, some of whom were at the peace talks in Sharm el-Sheikh. They wanted to look at what happens next in the Gaza peace deal, the day two, if you will. It was organised hastily by President Macron after Donald Trump presented his peace plan. One official suggested it was so Europe was still involved, but others say it was about genuine logistics. This is the Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper speaking last night after the talks.
This is a moment of profound significance, of relief and also of hope. After 2 years of devastating suffering, the tens of thousands of lives lost. So now to have this agreement on the ceasefire, on President Trump's peace initiative, is so incredibly important. And today in Paris, we've had different nations coming together to show our strong support for President Trump's initiative.
So what do they actually talk about while eating their scallops à la Provençal, as I'm told they ate? Security, governance, reconstruction. And that, in practice, actually meant they talked about what an international stabilization force would look like. They talked a lot about literally how they were going to get aid into Gaza, who was going to work with what aid agency, and basically get a better understanding of what every part that everyone is going to play, what's everybody good at. And
And it was pointed out to me, one of the things the UK is good at, well, they did the Northern Ireland peace process. They did the Good Friday Agreement. So the UK attending these meetings because they know how to put together those diplomatic skills and bring people round the table. And they say the Good Friday Agreement looks a little like Trump's peace deal. And who was in Sharm el-Sheikh at that peace talks but the UK National Security Advisor, Jonathan Powell, who, of course, was also involved in the Good Friday Agreement. And who else has been involved? Well, of course, Tony Blair, who is one of the only names we know who will be on Trump's peace board in Gaza, apart, of course, from Donald Trump. And the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, was asked yesterday whether he minded his predecessor, Tony Blair, being on the board of peace.
Now it does need to be implemented. I'm less interested, to be perfectly frank, in discussions about personnel than I am in getting it implemented. The UK has played an important part behind the scenes in relation to these negotiations, working with the US and mediators, and we stand ready to play our part in implementing this.
I'm told, though, it is fully expected European countries will push to have a seat to the table on the so-called Board of Peace, although government sources say it's too early to know yet. Nick, I know you'll be speaking to the Foreign Secretary herself in a few minutes, so maybe you can find out more.
I'll try. Aggie Chambray reporting for LBC. Coming up after news, we'll come back to your calls concerning the role of the United Kingdom. Seamus, you'll be the next caller on that. Then in the next hour, children of 13 required to get digital ID? Surely that's going too far. Plus, Dire Straits 4. You might want your MTV, but it's announced they're going to close all of the music channels around the world apart from in the US. So why that collapse? 7:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Israel's cabinet has approved Donald Trump's plan for a ceasefire in Gaza. The deal will see the release of the remaining hostages held by Hamas in return for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. It will also mark the withdrawal of Israeli troops to an agreed-upon line. Yvette Cooper has been holding talks with fellow foreign ministers in Paris. She will be speaking to Nick in the next half hour. And an independent watchdog's questioned the collapse of a trial of two men accused of spying for China. Jonathan Hall, KC, the reviewer of terror legislation, has told LBC the public explanation is not at all adequate. LBC weather, cloudy with spots of rain in central and northwestern parts, some sunny spells developing later. A high of 17 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
we will be talking about a breakthrough in the Israel-Gaza war. What does it promise to solve? And does Trump deserve the credit? Listen now by using our free Global Player app.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Calling all little wildlife explorers. Playmobil is now in Happy Meal. Look, is that a seal? And a sea turtle? They've been around for millions of years, just like me. Which will your little ones discover? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 14th of October, from 11 a.m, Playmobil comprised toys only, subject to availability.
The click of the indicator. A rhythm that shifts your focus from the day's work to the journey that's truly yours. With a dynamic Civic Hybrid, you get that choice that just feels right. All the thrill you want with the efficiency you actually need. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeomans Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money. Earning cash back on your supplies. Turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33 now, as we're discussing the work of the current Prime Minister as regards the peace in Middle East. Let's find out what a former Prime Minister is about to be doing on the work front. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, joins us with all the details. Who are we talking about, Christian? Morning to you.
Good morning. We're talking about Rishi Sunak, a man of substantial independent means prior to entering politics. He has now added another couple of roles to his post number 10 portfolio. He's already an advisor at Goldman Sachs. And we learned today that he has been given the green light by the Whitehall body that says yay or nay to politicians going into business. He's been given the green light to take on two major advisory roles in the field of AI. One at Microsoft, where he will provide a high-level strategic insight into the interaction between technology and society. That's according to an announcement. And he will also take up a similar role advising on geopolitical trends at Anthropic, which is the US-based AI company behind the Claude platform, which I think is very good, by the way. And that's valued at about $180 billion. One other thing I can tell you about Anthropic is that they launched a UK wing of their business. It's got 43 people on the payroll with staff costs of just under 25 million quid. So you can break that down. If they were a flat socialist entity, which I doubt they are, that's about £500,000 each per employee in the UK. I'm not sure whether Mr. Sunak is joining the UK wing or the US mothership, but either way, we keep hearing about the AI jobs boom, and Rishi Sunak appears to be the most recent beneficiary of it.
Well, that's one vacancy filled, but on City AM Online, there are problems with other vacancies or the rate of them, Christian.
Yes, I'm afraid so. We've seen data this morning, the latest assessment from the Recruitment and Employment Confederation and the consultancy audit giant KPMG put out their latest statement on the state of the UK labour market. I'm afraid it's not good. The number of vacancies has fallen at its fastest rate across the UK since the pandemic. And indeed, the increase in salaries that we've got used to in recent years has tailed right off as firms are no longer needing to be as competitive to attract talent. Picture in London is particularly bleak, actually. Decline in permanent vacancies in London has fallen at the quickest rate since August 2020 in the immediate aftermath of that first lockdown. As we're well used to hearing, a lot of these job losses are coming in retail and in catering, but also now we're seeing data that it's hitting more professional sectors as well. This is the sort of stuff that will keep people at the Bank of England awake at night as they consider their route on interest rates with inflation in mind. And it also comes, just to note, on the same day that we've got data showing footfall has slumped across the retail sector. And also the British Chambers of Commerce have put out a report based on a survey of about 5,000 businesses, which, again, carries a pretty stark warning for the Chancellor that business is bruised, it's a bit battered, and it cannot afford, in their words, any further tax tinkering at the upcoming budget.
Why is Tesla making the headlines?
Well, normally Tesla's in the headlines because of something that its founder Elon Musk has said or done. At the moment, we're getting stories through about a new US investigation into the number of times in which self-driving Tesla cars, the future of the Tesla brand, have been found breaking traffic laws, including driving on the wrong side of the road or not stopping at red lights. There are about 3 million cars in the US that are equipped with this self-driving technology, and so there are now 58 reports of electric cars having committed these traffic violations, which is in line with data that we do have access to that shows that in general these self-driving vehicles are, I think, a lot less likely to be involved in an accident than cars driven by people. That said, there are still some things to iron out for self-driving vehicles. Apparently they're not entirely reliable at dawn, at dusk, so, you know, best go out with the sun high in the sky. But this is an investigation that will go on, and as it goes on, there will still, I'm sure, be more and more ramping up of self-driving technology and rolling out of self-driving vehicles in the US.
And it's the channel. We wouldn't have had stars such as Kelly Brook, Cat Deedy, Joel Dommett without MTV, but they seem to be in dire straits. Why so, Christian?
Well, you know, I can remember, I'm a man of a certain age, and I can remember that we would huddle around a TV to watch MTV, to see the latest music videos. You know, these were major cultural events. And of course, the world has changed in many, many ways since my teenage years. And MTV is not immune from those changes. They are, the owners of the channel have announced that it's over. The five channels that are around the MTV brand in the UK are going to be axed at the end of this year. Just consider the different ways in which people now have access to music, let alone just music videos. The rise of streaming giants, streaming platforms, music platforms, of course, it's been exceptionally hard to keep up. And it's a sort of purely pragmatic business decision by the owner of these channels to say their time has come. But I think a lot of people will look back and remember, as I have just done this morning, Nick, thinking about some of the bands and the people and even some of the shows that we used to watch on MTV. But no more.
You and me both, Christian. The number of hotel rooms I've been in and switching on MTV to try and sort of lift the mood a little bit. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you for your input on that. Just coming up on 7:40. Seamus in Wellington. Thank you. Seamus is in Wellington. And thank you for hanging on the line. What has the role of the UK been here? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I'm very keen to give Keir Starmer credit for recognising Palestine and putting a target on every Jewish person's back in the UK.
Oh, right.
Creating a climate of fear in our universities, in our hospitals, on the streets, in places of worship for Jewish people. The man is a complete and total irrelevance. He's created a two-tier justice system in this country. He embarrassed...
He's not responsible, of course, for illegal acts or hostility or inciting this sort of behaviour, but what you can question is the wisdom of some of his decision-making, because I wouldn't want it to seem as if he's sort of incited that level of unrest. Back to you, Seamus.
No, I've not made a statement that he's incited it, but he has not applied the law evenly across this country. He's overseen a government now that's prosecuting 30-plus people a day for expressing opinions, some of them unsavoury, but freedom of speech is under threat in this country. This man is an irrelevance, and it's shameful.
Well, he's the Prime Minister. Hold on, you say he's an irrelevant, Seamus. He's the Prime Minister. That's hardly an irrelevance, sir.
As far as Palestine goes, he's been irrelevant. And Mark Rubio is on record as stating that his and Macron's recognition of Palestine got in the way of an earlier peace settlement. He has not contributed in any way or form. He's wrapped himself in this conflict simply to pacify his Muslim vote.
Seamus, thank you. Strong views. Enjoy your weekend. And in a related conversation, I want to share with you some figures that were released by the government. These are official statistics that Jewish people face by far the highest amount of religious hate crimes per person in the UK over the past 12 months. Now, I want to state one person is one too many. But for the purpose of context, let me tell you that the rate of religious-related hate crimes targeted at Muslims, and that is wrong as well, comes in at 12 per 10,000 people, OK? So 12 incidents per 10,000. Regarding Jewish people, that figure grows to 106 per 10,000 people. So every single one is wrong. But in second place are our Muslim friends, 12 per 10,000. In the top spot are our Jewish friends, 106 per 10,000. Extraordinary. Dave Rich is Director of Policy at the Community Security Trust, a charity tackling anti-Semitism. And for the purpose of full disclosure, let me say that I'm privileged to serve on one of the boards involved with the CST. Dave joins me now. Good to have you on, sir. What do you take from those figures? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. As you say, every hate crime is appalling, and we work very closely with partners from across all different communities in trying to tackle hate crime. But there's no doubt these figures show, as they have every year, that the burden of hate crime falls disproportionately on the Jewish community. Because it's such a small community, I think people don't realise there's only around 300,000 Jewish people in the country. And year after year, we see the number of anti-Jewish hate crimes is far out of proportion to that size, and especially if we bear in mind that these figures don't even include the hate crime statistics from the Met Police, so it doesn't include London for reasons I don't quite understand.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously you know that I live and work in London, and I fear that, but they can only get worse. If we were to include the Met, Dave, this is going to look even more bleak, isn't it?
You know, the previous year, around 40% of all religious hate crimes were against Jewish people, so if we do the maths, it may be that the number of anti-Jewish hate crimes actually went up last year rather than falling a bit from the peak after the October 7th attacks. So you combine these hate crime figures with the appalling tragedy that happened in Manchester last week, and you really get a sense of the scale of anti-Jewish hatred and the way it's actually playing out on the streets in this country.
Let's finish on a positive point. It would appear we are inching towards some kind of peace in the Middle East, both sides seeming to be ready to come to the table. If that is achieved, and crossing fingers and everything else, if that is to be achieved, can you see that perhaps the level of anti-Semitism might decline in the United Kingdom, Dave?
You know, we always have to try to be optimistic, even in the darkest of times. Everybody, I mean, well, everybody apart from extremists, has been hoping and praying for a peace deal, for the hostages to come home, for Palestinians and Israelis to be able to rebuild their lives. If that reduces some of the heat and the tension and the extremism in this country, that would be a good thing. But I fear that those trends have been around for a long time, certainly much longer than the last year or so, and it will take a long time for them to disappear.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks, Dave Rich, Director of Policy at the Community Security Trust, CST. Coming up after the news, in a related conversation, we're going to hear from Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper.
European nations, the UK, other nations, from across the world, will all be strongly playing our part in supporting this peace process.
And there are other stories, by the way. 13-year-olds needing some form of digital ID, that's going out to consultation. What is the thinking behind that? And have you heard something called demand avoidance? One pop star's wife is saying one of their children has it, which means they can never tell the child off. We'll have more on that in the next hour. 7:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Israel's government approved Donald Trump's Gaza plan for a ceasefire and hostage-prisoner exchange. The deal will see Israeli troops pull back to an agreed-upon line in the next 24 hours. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says European countries will be strongly playing their part in the peace process. LBC weather. Cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas. Some sunny spells later on. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40. It's after an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are back open, but it's still very slow. Also, delays on the A40 eastbound to the Hanger Lane gyratory. A van has broken down. There are restrictions on the South Circular Road at the Woolwich Ferry roundabout after an accident, and that means there's currently no access to the Woolwich Ferry. In Plaistow, Prince Regent Lane is closed both ways. That's following an accident. And in Penge, the High Street remains closed both ways after the fire yesterday. On the trains, Greater Anglia services are delayed between Wickford and Southend Victoria after a track problem earlier this morning.
This is LBC. Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £25 million. It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Oh, should have stretched first. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just £39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW Seasonal Inspection. T's and C's apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49. Come to your calls in a moment about what we're seeing playing out in the Middle East. But let's get some input now from someone who will know far greater than I what's going on. We turn to Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper, who joins us from the British Embassy in Paris. Good to have you on, Foreign Secretary. Obviously, I'm not going to hold you to this, but what do you understand the timetable might be over the coming 48 or 72 hours as regards the exchange of hostages and prisoners? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, we obviously want everything to happen as swiftly as possible. This is a huge moment now to have the ceasefire fully agreed. There were discussions about that coming in within 24 hours of the agreement by the Israeli cabinet, but we obviously hope that that will come in much more swiftly than that. We want to see it come into place immediately. And then the restoration, the return of hostages, again, was expected as part of the agreement to be within 72 hours, but again, we really want to see that happen as swiftly as possible. The hostages, for the families who have been waiting for so long, they desperately want to see their loved ones home. And then, crucially, the restoration of humanitarian aid. We already have work underway at the moment to start bringing humanitarian aid, desperately needed humanitarian aid, back into Gaza. That has to also happen urgently. We have had 2 years of this unimaginable suffering in Gaza, in the Middle East, and 2 years of families waiting for hostages to come home, tens of thousands of lives being lost in Gaza. So it's just urgent that this comes now to an end.
You're meeting with your counterparts from European and Arab countries. What does the future governance of Gaza, of the Palestinians, say? What does it look like? What are you seeking to achieve?
Well, the 20-point plan that President Trump set out includes a Palestinian committee that would be made up of Palestinians to be running Palestine, but with no role for Hamas, and that is crucial. So, of course, that needs to be established. The details of this will be part of the second phase of negotiations. So we've had the first phase that's come to a conclusion, and now the second phase underway. And the UK, other European countries, talking to Arab states, including Egypt and Qatar and Jordan and Turkey, about how we all work together to support this process and to make sure that it can be delivered in practice and to deliver on the US peace initiative that President Trump has set out.
You've mentioned President Trump a couple of occasions. Does he deserve the Nobel Peace Prize, Foreign Secretary?
Well, obviously, that is an independent process that I can't cut across, but
there
should be in any doubt about the significance. Well, I was going to say nobody should be in any doubt about the significance of this moment. And we would not have got here without the US Peace Initiative, without the work that President Trump has done. A lot of countries have been involved in this, a crucial role played by countries like Qatar, but also many other countries from across the world. The UK has been involved alongside other countries in putting forward proposals for this 20-point plan, effectively, for this peace process over recent months. And a lot of countries will be involved in implementing it. But I think everyone recognizes the crucial role that President Trump and the US have played to get us to this point. Now all of us have to make this work because we desperately need peace in the Middle East.
Let's try this another way. Would you support Donald Trump getting the Nobel Peace Prize?
So, look, I think I'm strongly supporting the work that President Trump
is
doing.
But this is a yes or no,
Yvette
Cooper.
It's an independent process. Nick, I'm not going to cut across process because I think we are actually about to have it making its announcements today. I think we're expecting imminent announcements from the Nobel Peace Prize. I can't. No, but I do strongly support the peace role that President Trump is playing, and I don't think anybody else could be playing that role right now, and we all need to recognise how important this is and strongly support that work. But I say again, this is a huge onus on everyone and all countries to come together together to deliver this. I actually think we were at the United Nations General Assembly just a couple of weeks ago, and I was really struck by the way that all countries were coming together behind this. It's clear US leadership, but also the work Qatar and others have been doing, and countries coming together to support it. The UK put forward proposals for a framework for peace over the summer, and it's many of those proposals have then fed into this 20-point plan. But we've still got a long way to go. This is still quite fragile, this process. We've got to all pull together to make it work.
Is it your understanding that Sir Tony Blair is going to be playing a role as the 20-point plan rolls out?
So he has been nominated by President Trump to be part of the Board of Peace, which is effectively been put forward as effectively an international oversight board, with the crucial work on the ground being done by this Palestinian committee, because Palestine has to be led by Palestinians. That's the right way forward, not by Hamas, but by Palestinians. So there is an oversight board that we are expecting different leaders or ex-leaders from all over the world to be nominated for that, but that is a matter for the second phase of the negotiations, and we're not at that point yet.
You know him well. What is his skill set that he could bring to this if it were to proceed, Foreign Secretary?
Well, obviously, he's somebody who has a background in the Northern Ireland peace process. And interestingly, the German foreign minister and I actually travelled to Paris yesterday from Belfast. We had been having meetings in Hillsborough Castle with the First Minister and Deputy First Minister from Northern Ireland, who were talking about that peace process alongside Western Balkan nations, where, you know, they were 30 years on from the Dayton Accord, with obviously the devastation that happened in the Balkan regions if you go back three decades, but now there is peace. And what was interesting was we had all of those people coming together around how you have peace and reconciliation, how long it can take, because 30 years on, whether it be in Northern Ireland, whether it be in the Western Balkans, of course there are still challenges and disagreements, but that when you have that commitment to peace and everybody works together, huge things can change. And so we took very much those experiences that Tony Blair was involved in back in the day, and we were talking about those, the German Foreign Minister and I were talking about those at the dinner that we had last night, and about those experiences.
Until a few weeks ago, you were Home Secretary. Last couple of questions. You're probably aware the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology is to consult on digital ID for children as young as 13. How supportive would you be of that?
Well, everybody has forms of digital ID, don't they now? I mean, we all have different ways of having to prove who we are and so on. So the department's going to consult on the details and how we make this work.
Would you support it, Foreign Secretary? Process
so that everybody's not...
Do you think 13-year-olds should have some form of digital ID?
Well, lots of 13-year-olds already do, and what the department is going to be consulting on is exactly how that should be taken forward. So I do think that this is the right way forward to have this a standardised process now, and it's something that we had been already setting out for people who come to work from abroad. We had already started a process of developing effectively digital ID with e-visas and so on for those coming to the UK from abroad, so that actually people can prove who they are and whether they have a right to work in the UK.
Some months ago, you lauded the one-in, one-out deal. You might be aware that the numbers are in. To misquote the great late TV reporter Brian Hanrahan, I've counted them in and I've counted them out. 10,040 people have arrived since this policy. 26 have left. Will you now accept this deal is absolutely risible?
Well, we're obviously continue to remove and return people, and in fact there's been a nearly 30% increase in the returns of failed asylum seekers since the general election. So there's huge numbers of returns that we've actually been increasing, and rightly so. But you talked specifically about the French pilot agreement. It is a pilot. We made no secret about that. We described it as a pilot to get things going and to test systems, and those systems are now in place, are now being tested and are are proving to work.
How
so
can
we
you
offer
say
the
they're
first
working?
Time. So we are, just a minute, Nick, let me just finish, because the systems to make sure that actually you can properly return people, that it doesn't get blocked by the courts. So that is now happening, and we've now shown it is possible for the first time to return to France people who arrived on small boats. Because frankly, somebody is coming on my boat through a criminal gang, actually we should be able to return them back to France, to the country that they have come from. So with the pilot now being rolled out, now we have the potential to be able to ramp it up. I do want to see those numbers increase. I also want to see that be built with other countries as well. We do have to test processes and deliver it. If you remember, the previous government ran a Rwanda scheme that ran for 2.5 years, didn't return a single person. The only thing they managed to do was 4 volunteers in the space of 2.5 years. So what we're doing is doing things very practically, step by step. That's the right thing to do. But of course, then we'll be going further, bringing in a whole series of other changes as well.
Final question. Should we see China as friend or foe?
Well, we've been clear there's a whole series of security threats that have come from China. For example, things like transnational repression. For example, things like cyber threats and attacks and industrial espionage and so on. They are also, of course, an important trading partner. And also they're somebody that we need to work with on things like climate change. But where there are national security checks, threats, we need to take them immensely seriously and respond to them. And we continue to do that.
Good luck with your meetings with your counterparts later today. Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper, thank you for your time joining us from the British Embassy in Paris. Taking us to 8 o'clock for LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, a ceasefire is due to take effect in Gaza by tomorrow morning after Israel signed off on the first phase of a US-led deal. It'll see the release of the remaining Israeli hostages held by Hamas in return for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. The IDF will withdraw to an agreed-upon line. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described it as a momentous development.
We fought during these 2 years to achieve our war aims. And the central one of these war aims is to return the hostages, all of the hostages, the living and the dead. And we're about to achieve that goal. We couldn't have achieved it without the extraordinary help of President Trump and his team.
The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been holding talks with her European counterparts in Paris. She's told Nick that aid supplies must now be able to reach Gaza.
We have had 2 years of this unimaginable suffering in Gaza, in the Middle East, and 2 years of families waiting for hostages to come home, tens of thousands of lives being lost in Gaza. So it's just urgent that this comes now to an end.
The UK's terror law watchdogs told LBC he is investigating the collapse of a Chinese spying trial. Prosecutors say they had to drop the case against two men because of a lack of evidence labelling Beijing a security threat. Jonathan Hall KC says the public explanation is not at all adequate. A man who was questioned over last week's synagogue attack in Manchester has been rearrested at the city's airport. The 30-year-old is being questioned on suspicion of failing to disclose information about an act of terrorism. And it is Global's Make Some Noise Day. All of our stations, including Capital, Heart and Classic FM, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like Sam. He and his wife Jess lost their baby at 17 weeks. He was offered bereavement counselling through the Lily May Foundation, funded by Global's Make Some Noise, and says it really helped.
We obviously arrived at the hospital, the three of us, and then we're coming away, the two of us, and just nothing prepared you for it. Obviously, friends and family were lovely and really supportive, but I just kind of feel no one knows what to say.
And thank you, because so far you've helped us to raise £1,443,213. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 95.09. It closed down 39 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern parts of the country. Some sunny spells developing later on. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait. because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after 8, Friday, October the 10th. Let's return to one of the subjects I aired with the Foreign Secretary. I tried to get an answer. I don't know that I actually did. The idea, children the age of 13 could be made to get some form of digital ID. 13-year-olds? It doesn't sit particularly well with me, but what do you make of that? Plus, later in the show, we will come back, of course, to the developments as we hopefully inch towards some kind of peace in the Middle East. But it has already been said that those protests that take place every weekend will continue. And this is nothing about pro-Palestine. This is simply hatred of Israel. That's what I'll be arguing. And that's what keeps those demonstrations going. In other news, have you heard of something called demand avoidance? This was addressed by Izzy Judd. Izzy is the wife of McFly star Harry Judd on the Stompcast podcast.
All these anxieties are forming in them, that people are putting pressure and demand on them. They don't respond to authority or hierarchy.
Is that just a child being naughty and not doing as they're told, or something called demand avoidance? We'll look at that later in this hour. And seeing red over road users who won't see red. The extraordinary number of cyclists that just cycle through red lights, on their cycle lanes and other parts of the highway. One newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, decided to monitor a particular busy junction, and they were going through at about roughly the rate of a 3 a minute. I think it's going to be far greater, but there is only one way to find out.
I'm LBC's Henry Riley, and I'm at the Gray's Inn Road junction in Holborn, counting how many cyclists think red means go.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I cannot remember how many times I've told you what the process is when we set these shows up, but through the course of yesterday I get various calls from what's laughing then as a journalist who tells me the stories that are going on. And I have to say, when you phone me with this one, I just say, is this for real? Children of 13 could be made. Now, I do stress could be made to get digital ID, as this is in the pilot stage. Children as young as 13. Now, a petition against digital ID as it is, and we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, a petition against it already stands at almost 3 million people. But this seems to have been just blithely waved aside as the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, which should obviously be one of the contributing government departments to make this work, says the government would introduce ID cards or digital ID for everyone aged 16 and over and is to consult on bringing it in for children as young as 13. In the last 15 minutes or so, I was speaking with the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper. She's in Paris for other matters. But I reminded her, she was, of course, Home Secretary just last month. So would she support this idea?
Well, everybody has forms of digital ID, don't they now? I mean, we all have different ways of having to prove who we are and so on. So the department's going to consult on the details and how we make this work.
Would you support it, Foreign Secretary?
So that everybody's
do you think 13-year-olds should have some form of digital ID?
Well, lots of 13-year-olds already do, and right. What the department is going to be consulting on is exactly how that should be taken forward. So I do think that this is the right way forward to have this a standardised process now, and it's something that we had been already setting out for people who come to work from abroad. We had already started a process of developing effectively digital ID with e-visas and so on for those coming to the UK from abroad so that actually people can prove who they are and whether they have a right to work in the UK.
Not really answering it in reality, was it? Silky Carlo is director of Big Brother Watch, joins me now. You're quoted in one of the papers, Silky, in the Daily Mail, as saying, this is almost Orwellian. What do you mean by that? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think it's absolutely Orwellian. I think that the public have been sold this rehashed idea of a mandatory digital ID on a lie, frankly, that it's necessary to curb illegal working. But now the truth in the small print is becoming clear. It's going to be a boarding pass, Starmer said yesterday, for everyday life. And now we're even talking about children needing a digital ID that they will be enrolled in this sprawling biometric surveillance system. It really begs the question, what exactly does the Prime Minister have in mind for the digital ID system? And it isn't going to be just about stopping illegal working. Already we've had ministers talking about this being used for everything from benefits and pensions to private banking, education, childcare. This has all the hallmarks of a very expansive system whereby we suddenly need permits and a digital license to live our everyday lives.
A government spokesperson or spokesman says this is to help employment and to help legitimate employment. And in some areas of the country, children can go and do like newspaper deliveries aged 13 and 14. That's the justification they give, Silky.
Yes, it would be funny were it not so serious. But I mean, if the government are honestly saying that a 13-year-old doing a one-hour paper round on a weekend requires a digital ID and a facial biometric to show it to the newsagent in order to work, I think we're entering a very different kind of Britain altogether. And that's why I think the public see through this, and that's why there has been the enormous backlash that there has been. Nobody's voted for this. Keir Starmer never put this to the public. This wasn't in the manifesto. And it shows his disdain for democracy, that millions of people have said, we see through this, we don't trust it, and it's profoundly un-British. This is a checkpoint Britain. We don't carry papers. We don't ever require digital pass to go about our lives, and yet that is what is being imposed upon us.
We don't, as you rightly point out, and while I'm with you absolutely on the same page as regards children of 13, isn't there an argument when you get to 16 or certainly 18, with the number of people that seem to be arriving in this country unchecked, this is a way that you can possibly check them prior to employment or provision of healthcare?
There are already right-to-work checks that employers legally have to do in this country.
But they're not working then, Silky, are they? Clearly.
Well, unfortunately, the introduction of a digital ID isn't going to be a magic wand that suddenly makes an employer who wants to break the law suddenly conduct these kinds of checks. So this is the thing. This expansive system is going to affect the law-abiding British public. It's not going to impact the grey economy and people who are working illegally in this country. And it goes to show that Starmer has absolutely no idea what to do about that problem, but instead is exploiting people's concerns to introduce something wholly different. And I really, really hope that parliamentarians, and that's what Big Brother Watch will be doing, is campaigning and fighting tooth and nail on this, that parliamentarians have a very, very critical look at this and defend the fundamental British liberty that we have always clung on to, that we are not a papers-carrying country and we do not need mandatory digital IDs.
Finally, Silky, a word on this. I'm sure you're aware of this. Labour has also, well, you'll know, Labour has announced controversial plans to lower the voting age to 16, but that now could require children to register the wish to vote from 14, which again could mean digital ID, so they can then go to the polling booths. A word on that, Silky.
Yeah, phenomenal. And you know, there are ways of people being able to prove their identity and their right to vote without needing Starmer's ID. It's ludicrous that a British passport is no longer British enough in order to prove your eligibility for things like the right to work. And so the digital ID is clearly going to sprawl into many different areas of life where it's just not justified.
Grateful for your time, Silky Carlo, Director of Big Brother Watch, 12 after 8. Listening to that, Ryan Wayne, who's Executive Director of Politics at the Tony Blair Institute, and joins me now. We'll talk about adult, as it were, adult use of digital ID. But where are you, Mr. Wayne, on the idea of 13-year-olds? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Look, I think the digital ID debate has gone mad, so let me inject some common sense into it. 13-year-olds should not be mandated to have a digital ID. End of. And look, over the last decade, this phrase has not left my lips before. But to be fair to government, I don't think they're suggesting that. They're consulting on it. And call me old-fashioned, but I think consultation is a good thing, and we want to hear all forms of opinion and views on what a digital ID should and could be. At the Institute, we want to try and raise the level of ambition. I think a digital ID, at its best, will make life incredibly difficult for people who shouldn't be here and much easier for people who should. And I think our country deserves that. And frankly, listen to the last conversation with Big Brother Watch. Their level of ambition for Britain is so pitiful and so sad. They want to maintain a status quo that's just failing. And voters, citizens have woken up to that. So let's try and change it. I think this is a good conversation to have. Let's embrace being a democracy.
At what age would you say, Ryan, that we should have to avail ourselves of a digital ID?
I think adults will want to have a digital ID when it comes to access and services, because it's going to make it so much easier. No longer having to send bank statements where you've had to scribble out the transactions just to prove who you are to get your kid into school, which is what I'm doing at the moment. And I do think when it comes to the right to work, you look at France, we've got a lot to learn from different countries, not to copy, but a lot to learn from different countries who are successfully rolling out the digital ID and aren't the dystopian countries that Silky Carlo would want you to think they are.
But Silky France just said we have practices that should stop employers being able to do this anyway, is what my previous contributor would say, Ryan.
She would, but France would tell you different. And Silky was also very clear that she doesn't believe we can shut down the shadow economy. I'm more optimistic and ambitious for this country. I think we can. In France, they've been able to do it through digital ID. There's no reason why we can't do it here.
All right. Grateful for your time, Ryan Wayne. Thank you. Good luck with getting your child or children to school. I hope that goes well for you, by the way. You're Executive Director of Politics at the Tony Blair Institute. Well, there are the two sides. A little bit bouncy on that line, so I will leave it there, Mr. Wayne. Thank you for your input. Those are the two sides. Digital ID. Look, I'm still not comfortable with it, but I kind of get the argument for 18 and above. 13 and age 14, you'd have to sign up if you wanted to be able to vote at 16. We'll take your views on that. And staying with our younger folk and younger listeners, this idea of demand avoidance, as spelt out by Izzy Judd, wife of the McFly star Harry Judd, on the Stompcast podcast.
All these anxieties are forming in them, that people are putting pressure and demand on them. Mm. They don't respond to authority or hierarchy.
Which means the child can never be told off. It's 8:15, LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
Israel's government approved Donald Trump's Gaza plan for a ceasefire and hostage prisoner exchange. The deal will see Israeli troops pull back to an agreed upon line in the next 24 hours. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says European countries will be strongly playing their part in the peace process. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas. Some sunny spells later on, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Woolwich Ferry is currently suspended, but that's because of an accident on the South Circular Road. So you can't get to and from the ferry because of an accident on the junction roundabout. It's also causing delays on the South Circular Road as well. Also in Plaistow, Prince Regent Lane remains closed both ways after an accident. And in Penge, the High Street is closed both ways after that fire that happened yesterday. On the A40, there were delays of about half an hour eastbound to the Hanger Lane Gyratory. And that was after a van broke down earlier, but that's now been recovered. On the trains, well, these problems do continue for LNER. The engineering works that are taking place today means that some services could be disrupted to and from King's Cross.
This is LBC.
Okay, that's six of the ragu and the linguine. Make a move, everyone, please.
The customers are rolling in at Stefano's new restaurant, so he needs another chef. Someone with a cool head and an appetite for success.
More flour in the bechamel, let's go.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Sponsor a job on Indeed to unlock more tools that save you time and help you hire quality candidates. To start hiring, visit Indeed.com/try today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
18 minutes after 8. Now, this is what's... Well, there are many things that are great about LBC, but this is what's fantastic about LBC, right? Who better to talk to about the idea of a 13-year-old having digital ID than a 13-year-old? So I'm delighted to welcome to the show Paravash in Ealing. Good morning to you, Paravash. You're 13.
Yes, I am. Good morning to you.
Hello. Shouldn't you be at school?
Actually, I am on the way to school right now.
Oh, you are? Okay. Do you think, at your age, you should have some form of what's called digital ID, Paravash?
Personally, I do not think that children at my age should have a digital ID, as if we have a digital ID, it brings us access to a wider range of digital facilities that are not appropriate for our age.
Oh, yes. What sort of things are you worried about then, Paravash?
I'm worried about children at my age going onto the dark web and multiple and different types of facilities that unsafe websites.
You're a very, very wise young woman. Are you very careful what you do if you're ever on the internet and using social media, Paravash?
Yes, I'm definitely very careful with the social media platforms that I use.
Okay.
On a daily basis.
Can I ask you something? You're only a couple of years off. Would you like to have the vote at 6? Because currently you'd have to wait until you were 18. The government says they should possibly get it at the 6 when you're 16. What do you make of that? Who's right on that one, would you say, Paravash?
I think the age of 18 is fine. As when you're 18, then I think you would be mature enough to actually have a say that is appropriate for the country that we live in.
You're a very smart young woman. Can I ask you, what's your favourite subject at school?
Personally, I like math.
And when you get your school report, what's the subject that you're perhaps not as strong on as you'd like to be?
I think, personally, when I get my school report, I am an all-rounder. Ah. However, the subjects that I struggle in are spelling.
Okay, okay. And what's your first lesson today, Paravash?
My first lesson is English.
Okay. And are you having to read a particular kind of book, or are you doing poetry? What are you doing in English at the moment?
I think a couple of days ago it was National Poetry Day.
Ah.
So today in my school we will have to recite a poem.
Okay, all right, okay. Can I ask you a question? Do you get a lot of homework on the weekend?
Yes, I actually do.
Yeah, I hated homework on the weekend. Are you a good girl and you do it, like, Friday night all done? Or are you like me and you're trying to get it done Sunday afternoon?
I do it as soon as I get it because then I have free time to do whatever I would like.
You sound such a smashing kid. Are you top of the class?
I am, actually.
We used to say, you're a bit of a boffin, aren't you? You're a smart young woman.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Will you give my best to your mum and or dad or whoever? Just to clarify, of course, we have to seek permission, and we got permission from the parent there. Paravash, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you. Good luck at English with your first class. Good luck when you get your next school report. I've got a sense you're going to do very, very well in the field of education. Right. A 13-year-old says thanks, but no thanks. What does Debs in Worthing say? Hello, Debs.
Hiya, how are you doing?
Lovely girl we just spoke with there, wasn't she?
Yeah,
lovely kid.
Great.
What's your view? I sense you're a bit older than 13.
A little bit older than 13. I've got a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Ah, okay.
And I don't see any problem with digital ID. I'm not sure it should be mandatory at 13, and I'm not sure why they would pick 13. But the first time I can remember them needing ID was to get into a 15 film.
Right. Oh, right. That's interesting. Okay.
And our local cinema will only accept digital ID for that. And you have to sort of, I think you have to give your passport to get, you know, on this app to get it. So
you have to preload an app with your passport or whatever. So then you take your child to the cinema and they can say, yep, okay, he, she can come in. Is that essentially where we're going with this?
Exactly. So my daughter is a sort of end of August baby. So mm-hmm. all of her mates were 15 almost a year before she was,
oh,
or during
crikey.
That year.
Oh, no.
So I would have been happy for her to sneak in, but there was absolutely no way she could do it because they wouldn't accept, I mean, not that she had fake ID, but they wouldn't accept anything other than this formal ID. So I don't see a problem with it, but I don't know why 13, and I don't think it should be mandatory, but it will stop them needing fake IDs. I guess the only downside is that my daughter's not going to be able to get a fake ID drink in the same year that her friends can.
I sense you're probably quite familiar with the world of fake IDs, Debs. You seem to be talking about this with a certain degree of knowledge. Can I put that
to you?
Well,
back in the day when there were no photos on driving licences and my sister was older, it might have happened.
It might avail yourself of the occasional drink. Debs, thank you very much for that. I've got to share with you, one of my sons has just texted, Dad, you're getting soft. You should have pushed Paravash more. That's one of my own children. Oh, dear God. Everyone's a producer. More calls on this in just a moment. 8:24 is the time. Now, have you ever heard of demand? Oh, appropriately enough, one of my sons just contacted me. Demand avoidance. As I've told you countless times, the best job I've ever had is being a father. The second best job is this. It's pretty much fun. But it is challenging being a parent. It is challenging. And now the wife of McFly star Harry Judd, Izzy Judd, has said one of their children has a condition that means they cannot be ordered to tidy their rooms or to mind their manners. Izzy Judd, speaks of pathological demand avoidance. She was speaking on the Stompcast podcast.
So from the moment a child wakes up in the morning, they are being told to eat their breakfast. What do you want for breakfast? Mm. Get dressed, brush your teeth. And all these anxieties are forming in them, that people are putting pressure and demand on them. Mm. And they don't respond to authority or hierarchy.
She went on to say that she left the children's clothes outside. I've left your clothes out, or I say nothing. I don't ask questions at all because that's placing a demand, and a demand is too anxiety-provoking. Now, Mrs. Judd didn't say which of the couple's three children, but obviously for our conversation, one is eight. The girl is eight. There's a son who's seven and another one who is three. But we don't know which one has, quotes, demand avoidance. Dr. Angerad Rutkin is a clinical child psychologist. Thank you for coming on. Doctor, have you heard of this demand avoidance? Good morning.
Hello there. Yes, good morning. Yes, I've heard of pathological demand avoidance, and I was very clear with your researcher that I am not an expert on it. But I think there is certainly a move in general away from the sort of the clinical picture. There is a move towards a sort of flattened hierarchy of families. It's less about the parent telling children what to do, or being that sort of old Victorian authoritarian parent, and more negotiating and compromising with their children.
What level authority is the right level authority when it comes to raising a child?
Well, this is a very good question. I fear and suspect we've gone a little bit too much the other way. I think we've moved very far from, as I say, the parenting of probably 100 years ago, and swung to a far more sort of liberal and hands-off way of parenting, which for many children, many families, works great, it's absolutely fine. But the problem becomes when your child may have additional needs or may have complex needs that you need to sort of step in and lead a little bit more. And that's the problem we're facing. Parents don't have the confidence or the skills, really, I would say, to lead in some issues. So that then is what becomes a difficult situation.
How are those skills to be learnt or brushed up?
Well, certainly not via social media. It would be my first... social media is marvellous. A lot of social media is opinion-based. It's people having a personal experience and wanting to talk about that. I would say let's return to the science, to the evidence. What does that tell us? There are some brilliant parenting models that we can use to help us figure out how to do things, how we're expected to do parenting without any guidance at all. I just don't even know how that's come to be the case.
Noting that you're not an expert on demand avoidance, but how would a parent determine whether a child is just willfully not doing what they're told or might have a condition?
Well, the condition is diagnosed clinically. You've got to go through a thorough assessment. It's highly related to autism, the pathological demand avoidance. So it's very unusual and rare still. So I guess other than that, whether your child is willful or not, that's for you as a parent to decide. Obviously, if your child is going to school and they're doing absolutely fine listening to the demands and challenges of being told what to do at school, then they can do that. So if they're having a problem doing that at home, then it's up to you as a parent to really start figuring out how can we get around this.
To those perhaps with an old-fashioned view, lastly, Doctor, who say children need boundaries, children need rules or discipline, how would you respond?
Well, do you know what I'd say? They're absolutely spot on. Children really do. I mean, if you think of us as adults, if we went into work or in our relationships and no one actually said to us, this is what is expected of you, you need to do this by this point, or you've got to behave in this way in our relationship, yeah, we'd be a bit lost. There might be a moment, an element of joy, thinking, great, I can do whatever I want. But actually, we'd be a bit lost and at sea. We need structure. We need a sense of clear expectations and boundaries, and if they're not placed for our children, they've got no idea what is expected of them, and then they get scared and anxious, and it just kind of becomes a vicious cycle. So we very much do need boundaries and structure, but we can do that in a warm, loving way that helps our children. So we love you, but you really do need to get to bed now.
Dr. Angerad Rudkin, I'll be in bed a little bit later, that's all right. You're a clinical child psychologist. Thank you for your input on that. Demand avoidance or just being a naughty boy or girl? What is the reality? We'll come to your calls on that. Plus, as one newspaper, excuse me, I'm nearly through it, don't worry, we're nearly there, but I couldn't find another word, couldn't get no around that one. As one newspaper mounts an investigation watching cyclists go through red lights at the rate of around 3 a minute, refusing to see red when they should see red, is it that big a problem? There is only one way to find out.
I'm LBC's Henry Riley, and I'm at the Gray's Inn Road Junction in Holborn, counting how many cyclists think red means go.
And we'll talk to Henry after this. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
Israel's cabinet has approved President Trump's plan for a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all the remaining hostages. The deal will see Israeli troops pull back to an agreed-upon line within 24 hours. The winner of the Nobel Peace Prize will be announced this morning. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, who's been speaking to Nick, wouldn't say if it should go to Mr. Trump.
I do strongly support the peace role that President Trump is playing, and I don't think anybody else could be playing that role right now, and we all need to recognise how important this is and strongly support that work. But I say again, there's a huge onus on everyone and all countries to come together to deliver this.
LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern parts of the country, some sunny spells developing later, a high of 17 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Counter-terror police Northwest have confirmed that the man who carried out the Manchester synagogue attack made a 999 call in which he pledged allegiance to the so-called Islamic State group. I really, really, really worry about this problem. We need to learn more about how this man was radicalised, but we know the pattern of this. It happens again and again and again and again. The signs are there.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
With Amex Gold, Dan earns points on obscure vintage football shirts and cheesy chips before the match and on tickets to the game. And he can put those points towards the cab home when they lose 4-0. And that's because Amex Gold lets you earn points on what you love and what you don't, to spend on things you like.
Representative 86.8% APR variable. Annual fee applies after the first year. Terms apply. 18 plus, subject to approval.
The click of the indicator. A rhythm that shifts your focus from the day's work to the journey that's truly yours. With the Clever Jazz Full Hybrid and its famous magic seats, you have the flexibility to handle everything from the school run to a weekend away. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeoman's Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play.
Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadapilla, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Demand avoidance. Really? 8.33 is the time. There's just a couple of emails on other subjects we've discussed and texts. I haven't done enough of those. Mark sells in Cambridgeshire on the idea of Sir Keir Starmer and what he's achieved. I think we were appalled by Sir Keir's comments yesterday, saying Trump has done some good work. Carries the implication his was minor but helpful role. It also suggests Starmer himself did the heavy lifting, when in truth the peace accord happened despite Starmer, not because of him. On the idea of digital ID, Clive Balchin in Lancashire, I fall into the category that if it got me on a plane quicker, I'd have an ID chip inserted under my skin and I'd have DNA at birth. I know what you mean about trying to get on an aircraft, but we might talk more about digital ID. But Chris is in Southport. Chris, demand avoidance now, a recognised condition. Are you buying it? Good morning.
We buy it and we live it, Nick, yeah. We have three kids. Our middle one, Max, is a PDA-diagnosed kid.
Sorry, what's the P part? I've got demand avoidance. What's
pathological
the P?
Pathological demand avoidance.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So, and I heard you saying, you know, is it just them playing up a bit or, you know, not wanting to do what they're told? So the word pathological is easily identified for us because of the circumstances in which he will avoid doing your demands. So, I mean, I would best describe, as I did to your producer, that you could say to your kid, do you want an ice cream or a cake, or do you want to go to the cinema or the swimming baths? And he would feel like you were trying to trick him or corner him. So both of those...
How old is the boy?
He's 15 now. But both of those options would be wonderful, wouldn't they? An ice cream or a cake, but he wouldn't take either. He loves both of them, but he couldn't take it. So we live in a world where you have to treat one kid differently to the others, which is against what you would have always historically been told.
But what happens if you go out for a family meal and the menu's put in front of him?
Well, that's very rare that happens, so there are those problems. We spend our lives, my wife and I, and we would toss things across the house from knowing that Max is between us in a bedroom, say, and we would say, we haven't been to Speak All for a while, or we haven't been to such and such a restaurant for a while, hoping that we're fishing and we're hoping that he tags onto something. If he decides that's something that he wants to do, we literally live in a world where we'll drop everything to go and do that.
But hold on. You're driving back with your other children, and you pull up at a hamburger bar. Do you want chicken nuggets or a burger?
Doesn't work like that, Nick. That's what I'm telling you.
Well, what would he say?
Is anyone hungry?
Yeah, we are. And so what do you want, son? Do you want chicken nuggets or a burger? Yeah, what do you want?
Anything that you particularly fancy.
Yeah, but what do you want, son? Do you want nuggets? I'll get you eight nuggets, all right? Done. Right?
No, not done.
Why?
Not done.
Well, he'll get
because
very hungry, won't he?
You have to let him choose yourself, Nick. That's the point that you're missing. You can't arrow someone in that direction. You just must let him choose. If he's hungry, he'll tell you. He's not, you know, crazy.
And if he wants chicken nuggets, he'll tell you.
So you just let him decide, and you let him decide when he wants and what he wants. And so that doesn't always suit the other two kids.
Hang on, they've got less problems than him,
and they've got to grin and bear it, you know?
Shall we watch Traitors or Gogglebox tonight? What do you want, son?
He wouldn't watch either of them because he'd be busy playing on his piano, of which is, you know, his expertise. So, you know, you've got to go with it, Nick, and you have to live with what you're given with, don't you?
And I'm very grateful that we're able to speak to each other so candidly. It's Christmas lunch in your house. Your wife or whoever cooks the turkey. Do you want another slice of turkey, son? What's he going to say?
He's going to say, I'd have had that turkey if I wanted it, and he would have took it. So, you know, he's got to make his own choices, and if you try and point him or direct him in one way or another, it just doesn't work.
How's he doing at school?
You learn that very quickly.
How's he doing at school?
He goes to a specialist school, of which he is absolutely overjoyed to be a member of. He struggles when he's not in school because of his routine and his happiness. And they are absolute experts in supporting him and other kids with different types of autism. And we couldn't be happier with how he's going. He's going to do a couple of GCSEs.
Okay.
And his old general mainstream school wrote him off 5 years ago before we fought for his place there.
Okay.
So it's all worked out pretty well for us, and we're not really worried about him, Nick. Do you know what I mean?
So the boy's 15. I mean, in 4 or 5 years, will he be able to work?
Of course, yeah. I've got my own company, but he's not interested in working for me. He's got his own ideas. He wants to do something with music, as I say. He's a pianist. He's wonderful at that. He loves animals.
What's going to happen? I wish him nothing but success, and let's hope he is a musician. What's going to happen when someone says to him, "So I tell you what, do you want to play Mozart or Beethoven?" What's he going to say?
No, he'll be playing with whatever he wants, Nick. You're just not getting it, buddy. But, you know, I could talk to you for 10 minutes about
it,
but, you know, it is what it is, and you've just got to let these kids get on with their life. They know what they're of sound mind.
No, sure, I'm not suggesting
what
otherwise.
They want to do.
All right. Listen, you're putting in a heck of an effort. Good luck with the entire family. Good luck with that particular lad. I won't name him again, but I know you did. Chris, thank you. Rod in Barnet, demand avoidance, interesting subject. Anecdotally, I've been married twice, 8 children, the youngest now 32, always families of their own. All of them were willful little so-and-sos when it suited them. But I was never that big on negotiation. Alex says, this is ridiculous, it's just bad behaviour. I don't know, is it? Annette in Sherborne, what do you say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I don't think it's bad behaviour, no. When you've got a child who's got a complex set of needs, our son has PDA. He was diagnosed a few years ago.
Might I ask how old he is?
He's now 7.
Yeah, okay.
And he's very eloquent and of sound mind, as your previous caller said. But I don't think he's being naughty, but I do think there is an element of willfulness in there. Because he talks to us about the fact that he can't help it. He can't help not being able to make a decision. So our main focus with him is that he struggles being asked to make a decision. So if you present him with 6 or 7 options for something, he really can't make a decision. If you present him with 1 or 2 options, he still can't make a decision. And Sod's Law, if you present him with 1 option, he may not be able to make a decision on that either. This doesn't happen all the time, but with siblings, it does make it very difficult.
You take him to a shop, a sports shop, to buy him some trainers. Do you want the blue pair or the red pair? What's he going to say?
If he's not able to make a decision, I'll make that decision for him, Nick. And that's how I have to
parent
him.
No, but what would he say? Do you want the Reeboks or do you want the Nike? Or I can't think of other manufacturers anymore. You know what
no,
I'm
that's
saying?
All right.
Yeah.
He would be able to make a decision on that one if he was having a good day.
Well, can I put it to you, he could make a decision on most things then?
Yes, I take that point entirely. It very much is on the day. And I always say to people, he has the opportunity to ruin a whole day for us. But he also has the opportunity to behave completely neurotypically. And what I was saying to your producer was that he has a twin sister and an older brother. And we parent him the same because they both find it incredibly unfair if we start to allow those boundaries to slip.
How patient are his siblings with him, or do they get a bit exasperated sometimes, Annette?
His elder sibling, who is 11, gets very exasperated by it because he says it's not fair. He says you walk around on eggshells sometime around him. And as you were alluding to earlier as well, I want to set him up for the world ahead of him, which there may not be the sympathies that we have at home and the patience that I'm able to demonstrate. But that does then cause us problems, because if I cause him to become quite distressed, it can then ruin a day out for us and we have to finish doing what we're doing. But on another day, he can be completely fine.
Okay.
It just very much depends on what way the wind is blowing with our child anyway.
And finally, to those who would say, well, you shouldn't be so indulgent, you should not let him destroy a day at the zoo or theme park or whatever, how would you, they're obviously not walking in your shoes, how would you respond to that?
When you've got a child who's visibly and emotionally distressed in front of you, you know, I've carried him back to a car before because he's kicking off. You know, I do install those boundaries. He doesn't get away with it. But ultimately, when I've got 2 other children to consider who are getting really, really embarrassed, we do evacuate, if you see what I mean. But I'll have that conversation with him. And then the next time, he just won't be allowed to come.
Annette, look after them all. Thank you. 8:42, we'll come back to this, but we go to other matters. One newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, positioned a reporter in a part of central London to watch red traffic lights to see if cyclists do see red, or when it's red, they go green. The journalist counted nearly 180 going through in the space of an hour, which, if my sums is right, about three a minute. I think it's going to be far worse than that in certain junctions. But there is only, as ever, one way to find out, and that's to deploy LBC's Henry Riley, who joins me from a busy junction. Tell the listeners exactly where you are in London. Henry, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, this perennial debate reignited with that article in the Daily Telegraph. I'm at the junction of Gray's Inn Road and Theobald's Road in Holborn. As you were referencing, 172 cyclists ran that particular set of lights in busy rush hour at 7:30 in the morning just a few days ago. Now, the main offenders apparently were Lime bike riders, which are the sort of e-bikes, school children, and there was even a woman in high-heeled boots. And there are surveys to back this up. One recent study by Lime found that more than half of London cyclists admitted to running red lights. Now, considering there are 3 million bike journeys in the capital per day, the numbers could be huge. So I've been asking people this morning, including cyclists, what they thought.
Do you see other cyclists doing it?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, it's totally normal.
Do you do it, be honest?
Yeah, sometimes, slowly, carefully.
Okay. Do you ever worry about getting caught?
Not really, no.
What's your experience with cyclists? Do you ever see them going through red lights, for example? Do you ever sort of...
Yes, quite often. And because of how quiet they are, obviously, I don't always see them come in. And for my particular blindness, dark colours don't exist. So, yeah, especially if they're dark.
Given the amount of cyclists around, I think the problem is relatively small, but can be extremely serious.
And Nick, technically there is a £50 fixed penalty notice for failing to stop for a red light on a bicycle.
Okay, well, you know what you have to do now, young Henry Riley. I know that junction very well. Let's start the clock in exactly an hour's time. You've probably been there a while, I would imagine, to get the report. How many cycles, just roughly, how busy a junction is it? How many have you seen jump the junction?
Well, I'll miss my Ocado order, but no problem. I'll be here for the next hour.
Henry Riley will report back. Thank you for that. Coming up after the news, we'll come back to our conversation concerning this paedopathological demand avoidance. And again, staying with conversations regarding our children, the fact that we are possibly heading towards a society where our children just don't talk to us and there's not enough family time. Something addressed by Prince William when he spoke with Eugene Levy for that Apple TV Plus show, The Reluctant Traveller.
None of our children have any phones. So Louis loves the trampoline. So he's obsessed by trampolining. And actually Charlotte does a lot as well.
We'll have more on that in the next hour. 8:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A ceasefire is due to take effect in Gaza by tomorrow morning after Israel signed off on the first phase of a US-led deal. It'll see the release of the remaining hostages held by Hamas in return for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says it's a momentous development. LBC weather, cloudy with spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, some sunny spells developing later, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays of about 2 miles on the M25 clockwise to Junction 11 at Chertsey. There's a load of debris across the road and one lane is closed. Also very busy on the A40 eastbound to the Hanger Lane Gyratory after a van broke down earlier. It's been recovered, but it's still slow for about half an hour. Problems now in Purley on the A23 Brighton Road southbound just after Purley Cross. There's been an accident and that's causing queues. There are restrictions still on the South Circular Road at the Woolwich Ferry roundabout after an accident. In Plaistow, Prince Regent Lane is closed both ways at Crofton Road after an accident. And in Penge, the High Street remains closed both ways after the fire yesterday.
This is LBC.
With the long, hot summer still fresh in the memory, it's easy to forget what's around the corner. Prepare your BMW for whatever the Great British weather can muster with a BMW seasonal inspection. For just $39.99, our expert technicians will top up fluids and oil, check the essentials like tyres, wipers and battery, and return your BMW washed, vacuumed and winter ready. Search BMW Seasonal Inspection. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Trudy, coming to you for your story about PDA, pathological demand avoidance. Sophia says all of us cope with stress and anxiety differently. PDA is a reaction. Our kids will make life choices based around their needs. We as parents need to support them and help them learn to manage their anxieties. I just want to check that I can read this out. Yep. Graham in Seaford. As a parent of a child with PDA, I can assure you this is not naughty or stubborn child. It's regarded as a form of autism. The brains are wired differently and see even the most basic polite demands as an attack and often go into flight or fight mode. Telling off only escalates the situation. Trudy in Halifax, what can you tell me on this, Trudy? Morning.
Good morning. Well, I work with young people with PAD, and I think it's shifting the perspective. This is not about, I won't do this, I can't do this. This is how my brain works. It works differently. I'm not neurotypical. So if we look
but
at
But I was
it,
a difficult child. I didn't always do as my parents told me.
You know, a bright child won't. It's natural for a child to challenge. That is natural. You want that. An intelligent child will push boundaries.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's hard work.
Well, otherwise, they're just going to be a drone. There's no point. You want a child to have a bit of something inside
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. But yeah. It is the understanding that the brain is working differently. It's wired differently. Mm. So when somebody has, and quite often it's attached to autism, you have a child that is often in panic mode. They're in the brainstem. They're in their, what we might term, the reptilian brain. So they're responding to things. So if we look at the tip of an iceberg, we're seeing a child having a tantrum, kicking off, swearing, fighting, whatever. Mm. What is underneath that? And it's what's happening in the body. So it's the rush of blood, it's the panic, it's being overwhelmed.
Or they just want to be naughty.
It's fear of failure. But that isn't it. It's not wanting to be naughty.
Well,
they
it is.
Can't.
Children are naughty at times.
Absolutely, adults are naughty at times.
Indeed, they are. Yeah.
But this is different. And what you have to teach that child what is happening in their body. What is their brain doing? Why are they having this?
They're
response?
Being a kid.
But this is not. This could be an adult.
Well, that's different.
Couldn't it? Because this is not something you cure. If you've got PDAD as a child, you will have PDAD for your entire life.
Hang on, PDAD? We've added another D here. What is
pathological,
it?
Pathological demand avoidance disorder.
Oh, we now have to go PDAD. P. Diddy. Because it's not, I only learned about PDA that, an hour ago. Now I'm learning about P. Diddy. Where's this going to end?
No, but you're not being serious, are you? Because
well,
this
let me read you. Right, answer. Liz sends this text, right, with a laughing face. I'm a mum. Having had three kids, and the middle one being an absolute stubborn little so-and-so, it's easily sorted. She had a choice. Do as you're asked, or go to your room. 3 weeks later, of spending many nights in her room and missing dinner, it was all sorted, says Liz. What would you say to that mum?
That's fine. She doesn't have a child with PDAD, does she?
Well,
you know, it's the science. The evidence is there in science of the brain working differently. And how you work with these children is you help them to understand and give them strategies to manage the feelings they have when a demand is placed on them.
You're a teacher, did you say?
I am indeed. 32 years of special needs teacher and trauma-informed teacher.
So you've probably worked with more children with PDAD than you can remember.
Oh, I remember every one of them. And
no, but I mean the number of all, or is it quite rare?
It's rarish, but there are other things. There's ODD. There's a number of defiance disorders.
What happens when they reach adulthood?
It depends on very, very complex needs. But it's the teaching of how you manage these things.
But are they able to go into work?
Absolutely.
To get a job?
Why not? We're not talking about IQ, are we? We're talking about emotional intelligence, and it's the teaching of emotional literacy and finding strategies of how they deal with and how they understand what they have. That's the important.
But I'm going to use your name as Trudy, and you've got PDAD. Trudy, yes. And you're working in a shop. Trudy, yes. I need you to have your lunch break between 11 and 12 because the other girl wants her lunch between 12 and 1. Are they going to say, yeah, fine? Or are they going to say, no, I can't do that? What's going to happen?
Perfectly reasonable. I mean, if that you can agree things, and that's the part of having the boundaries and the routines, and this is a necessity, and it's a discussion. And hopefully, if they have the right support of your person, can make those decisions.
Right, right.
And know that it's the right thing to do. So I say it's about teaching somebody to understand what's happening in their brain, what's happening in their body, and give them the skills to cope in a society where we all have to comply with demands. What's important, giving them those skills, using the science, helping them to understand what's going on in their
brain. If there was a terror alert in the school, presumably these youngsters would know to run out the back door.
Absolutely, yeah.
What if they can function like that, why can't they function in other matters? What is it about a critical scenario?
That in a critical scenario, maybe not the time to think about things, because everything moves very quickly. The problem there is keeping them out of the building and managing them when you're outside.
What, you mean they want to run back in if there's a terror attack in a school?
Absolutely, yeah.
A PDAD child, knowing there's a terror incident going on in a school, will run out of the back door and then try and run back in.
Maybe that's quite.
Why?
We've had it with a fire alarm recently. Because once they've had time to think outside of that, why am I outside? And it's about loss of control, the security, the fear of not being in control.
Good luck with the teaching you do. Thank you for all your input. 5 to 9. Tony's in Nottingham. Tony, what can you do? What did you do for a living? Good morning.
Yeah, I don't do it anymore. I used to be in the police, before Nick.
Well, you've seen some critical incidents then, haven't you?
I have. Well, this is my thing, because my lad has got this. It's just two different angles. My lad has got this to some degree. I think he's a little bit on the spectrum.
Okay.
A little bit on the spectrum. I think we all are on little bits of spectrums. We're all weirdy things as we've been growing up. I used to have my own knife and fork, and I wouldn't eat anything apart from with that. But we get over them as we grow up. But this incident, so I went to a job where grandson had threatened grandma with a knife.
Mm.
And then we were called to that job, and I don't know how to do it now, but we went in quite very forcefully, shouted.
How old was the boy?
Another. He was a mid-teens, perhaps 14,
right.
Something
okay.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he had to be very compliant very quickly with what I was telling him to do.
Excuse me.
I wanted to see if he got nothing in his hands.
Yeah.
And then I had to search him, and then we'd separated both parties. And I said, right, you come in here, come and sit on this bed in here and I'll talk to you. And he did exactly 100% what I told him to do, sat down.
Right.
And when the situation had calmed down a little bit, and my colleague was talking to his grandmother and I was talking to him, I said, well, you know, what's the problem? What's going on? And he said, well, I've got this demand avoidance syndrome, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but I've just come in here and I've told you to show me what you've got nothing in your hands, allow me to search you. go into the bedroom, sit on the bed, and all the rest of it. And you've done it exactly as I've told
totally
you to.
Complied.
And he had no answer. So my thing with my lad is, it is like, eventually, if you put them in a situation where they've got to make a decision, eventually they'll come up with it. I think if you indulge them with all this indecisiveness, it makes it worse.
What would your advice be then? Having done that as a police officer, having been a parent with a child who has maybe a couple of challenges, what would your advice be, lastly, Tony?
We've just pushed my lad into Saturday work. He's been very successful. He's pushed him into in the deep end a bit, really. And he's had to come to make his own decisions. He now catches the train to work.
He's got an apprentice, perfectly
fun, you know, normally functioning lad. He's definitely on a bit of a spectrum I'd say, you know, with various things, but he's got to grow up and get over it.
Tony, thanks for the job you did in the job. Look after the family. Thank you. Might be a minute late to news. Get Nick in Tunbridge Wells in on this. You've got someone you know who has this PDAD. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Basically, my partner's younger sister has PDA.
How old?
And I just... She's 13 now.
Right.
I just sort of wanted to go into a bit of detail of how she sort of explained it to us. When she was a younger child, obviously we thought, you know, it's just bad behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
You asked her to do anything, literally brush your teeth, get in the shower. She would go into a full-blown meltdown. Her dad's a rugby player and she used to bring him to tears. Great. With the way that she used to attack him.
Physically attack him?
Yes, physically. Sure. Like,
right.
she used to scratch his face and everything, put his hair out. Now she's got older, she sort of explained to us that when you tell her to do something, she just has it in her head that she's not on equal footing with you. Basically, with her in particular, we had to then, it's kind of using a bit of reverse psychology at times, and basically say, no, you're not allowed to brush your teeth tonight. And then she would go out her way to brush her teeth.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So it's definitely not just naughty children. I mean, when I was younger, I was a naughty child. You know, I get grounded and I used to climb out the window to go out and play with my friends.
Did you? Right. It's not just that. Nick, I'm afraid I've got to go. We're late already to the news. Give my best wishes to your partner and your partner's family and to that girl in particular. That interesting use of reverse psychology. The music means we move on. But will those demonstrators be moving on? As it would appear, we're inching towards a peace deal. They say those protests will go on. And it's time to be candid. It's a hatred of Israel that fuels most of those protests. Plus, good luck to the Princess of Wales, warning of the dangers of screen time and how we need to try and wean our kids off their screens. Those stories and more, plus, of course, the tally of cyclists going through that red light as well, after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described Donald Trump's Gaza deal as a momentous development. A ceasefire is due to take effect by tomorrow morning, followed by an exchange of Israeli hostages and hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been holding talks on the next steps with her European counterparts in Paris. LBC's political correspondent, Aggie Chambray, is there.
Here in Paris, they were discussing security, governance, reconstruction. For example, what an international stabilization force will actually look like, how they're actually going to get aid into Gaza, and basically, logistically, a better understanding of what every country is going to do. In the last hour, the Foreign Secretary told Nick Ferrari this.
We have had 2 years of this unimaginable suffering and 2 years of families waiting for hostages to come home, tens of thousands of lives being lost in Gaza. So it's just urgent that this comes now to an end.
Yvette Cooper also said it was too early to say if European countries will push to have a seat on the so-called Board of Peace, although I am told it is fully expected that they will. Aggie Chambray, LBC, Paris.
Foreign Secretary has defended the possibility of children as young as 13 needing digital ID. She says the Home Office is consulting on exactly how the plans should be taken forward. And it's Global's Make Some Noise Day. All of our stations, including Classic FM, Heart and Smooth, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like 14-year-old Mia, who's faced struggles in school and with her mental health. She's been supported by mentoring from Youth Action Alliance, funded by Global's Make Some Noise.
Since Youth Action Alliance, I've had teachers come up to me and say, "You've really changed." And it's just the fact that my hard work is being recognised is the best thing.
And thank you, because so far you've helped us to raise £2,010,465. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 13 at 94.96. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas. Some sunny spells developing later. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Friday, October the 10th. Coming up in this hour, the pro-Palestinian protesters say they will carry on with their demo. Now, of course, we don't want anything to jeopardise or jinx where we are, but it would appear that this weekend is going to be a major breakthrough. But it won't stop the protests. I'll be asking why. Plus, Kate, the Princess of Wales, warns of the danger of screen time for children. Dr. Sanjeev Nichani is a consultant paediatrician at the University Hospitals of Leicester.
Whilst children are at home with their parents, is the time to start trying to reduce the amount of screen time and social media use.
Plus, countdown part one. We can count in minutes now to when the Nobel Peace Prize will be announced. Professor Henrik Sisar was a member of the Nobel Committee during President Trump's first time. He spoke with LBC yesterday saying that this ceasefire announcement might have happened too close to the deadline for Trump to win this time around.
It's important to remember that what happens within 48 hours of the announcement are probably things that the committee cannot fully take into consideration.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So the countdown is on for the Nobel Peace Prize, but there is another countdown on. Because around 20 minutes or so ago, I set LBC's Henry Riley the task of counting the number of cyclists who don't see red, as in they jump a junction. A busy junction in Holborn in London, this after one newspaper counted at a rate of about 3 a minute. Henry Riley joins me now. How many minutes are you in? How many cyclists have you seen? Henry?
We've just passed 24 minutes in. I thought this would be like counting sheep, but actually it's been quite stressful, Nick. It's a bit of a sensory overload here at this junction between Theobald's Road and Gray's Inn Road. 92 is the current count.
Wow.
A lot of weaving in and out of traffic. I'm not counting 93. I'm not counting e-scooters. There were five of those that have jumped the light. And also a lot of cyclists on pavements, 94. But yeah, 94 is the current, 95, 96. You come at a good time, 96.
Come on, let's stay with a few seconds, see if we can get the triple figures.
97.
Go on.
Is he going? No. Okay, there we go. 98.
All right, we'll come back to you. Green. I thought we might get the time. Henry Riley reporting. We'll go back to him, as you will probably conclude, in what about half an hour or so? Just over half an hour, I think. We'll have done. So when my colleague phoned me and said 172 in this newspaper investigation, I said, it's going to be way more than that. Way, way more than that. So if it's, 92, they're going right around at 4 a minute, they're going through. All right, return to that in a moment. Now, to other matters. And pro-Palestinian protests will continue until total liberation, organisers have warned. The ceasefire in Gaza, which, please God, will come into effect and lead to a ceasefire and possibly return of all hostages and prisoners, will not, it is reported, stop pro-Palestinian groups. Ben Jamal, director of Palestine Solidarity Campaign, we will continue to campaign. We're going to hear more from him in a moment. But on yesterday's show, I spoke with the senior government minister on the round, work and pensions secretary, cabinet enforcer, Pat McFadden. And I asked him, might we start to see people arrested because of this crackdown on, or potential crackdown, on chanting at protests?
Well, the Home Secretary spoke about this at the weekend. And what she was talking about is more powers for the police, where there are repeat protests and considering the cumulative effect on them.
But she didn't mention chanting, Pat, did she?
I do have to say, some of the things chanted on these demonstrations, I think, have been pretty irresponsible in the last couple of years. But I am more hopeful this morning, Nick, that instead of having to deal with weekly demonstrations, we might actually be dealing with a proper peace process.
And amen to that. But I've got to, I'll press you again, Mr. McFadden. Yeah. Could you get nicked for chanting?
Well, I don't know if you can get, you know, it's the police who will make that judgment. But I do think some of the things chanted on these demonstrations have been at best irresponsible, you know, and maybe worse than that. Yeah. And look at what happened in Manchester just a week ago with that terrible attack on the synagogue.
Government Minister Pat McFadden speaking with me yesterday. I mentioned Ben Jamal. He's director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and he joins me now. Before we get into detail of what might be coming up over the weekend, your response to what appears to have been brokered out of the US over the last 48 hours. Good morning to you.
Morning, Nick. What I would say, first of all, and, you know, speaking as the director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign and as a Palestinian, that my organisation and I are sharing, first of all, the immense relief of the Palestinian people, that they may be moving to a situation where the bombs will stop falling and importantly, aid in the necessary amount can be urgently brought in. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are still facing mass death through starvation. So it's absolutely crucial that this ceasefire holds, and that aid is brought in. I share also their trepidation, rooted in the knowledge that Israel has violated every ceasefire agreement it has ever signed. And I'm understanding already this morning there were reports of ongoing shelling north of Khan Yunis. But also, we share the knowledge of the Palestinian people that the root causes of what is now widely accepted across the human rights community by the UN and now even by the Mayor of London as a genocide, the root causes of that, which is Israel's ongoing military occupation and imposition across all of Palestine of a system of apartheid, that is not ended. And so if there is to be an enduring peace, then the root causes of why we don't have peace and have not had peace for over 70 years have to be addressed.
You do support the right for Israel to exist?
Well, that's a question. I don't support the right for Israel to exist as an apartheid state.
You don't support the right for Israel?
I don't support the right for Israel to exist as an apartheid state, by which I mean as a state that through a body of laws and policies privileges within its own state the rights of Jewish citizens above its Palestinian citizens. And I don't support the right of Israel to exist as an occupying force on Palestinian land.
So this isn't, the demonstrations in many instances are not solely pro-Palestinian. They are anti-Israel.
Well, they're anti-apartheid.
Well, no, they're anti-Israel, aren't they?
They're anti-apartheid, they're anti-occupation. I think those ought to be straightforward principles that everybody should support. They are principles that are rooted in the need for international law to be respected and universally applied. I would expect those to be principles that you would share. I'm sure, Nick, that you stand against Russia's illegal invasion.
Of course I do. I don't know why you're taking me to Russia, though.
Of Ukraine.
I don't know why you're taking me to Russia.
I would think you would resist an accusation that that means you're anti-Russian. You would say, no, I'm anti-Russian occupation and military invasion.
But I will move on. I don't see the activities of Israel in the fashion that you do. I wish we had more time to do. I've allowed you to characterise it the way you see it, and I'm grateful as ever for your time, Ben Jamel, director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, explaining why the demonstrations will go on. I hear what you say. That's not what I recognise as Israeli activity to be, but I respect your position. Ben, as ever, we talk a lot. Thanks for your time. Listening, Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. The demos go on. Is this in reality a loathing of Israel? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the mask's off. Not that it ever was really on in the first place. It was just convenient for a lot of people to pretend it was. If the people, despite Ben Jamal's verbal tap dancing, if the people on these marches genuinely were marching for Palestinian rights and for peace, they would have been calling for 2 years for the very things that would have brought an immediate end to the suffering of the Gazan people, the surrender of Hamas and the release of the hostages. Instead, all we have heard is calls for jihad, intifada, for the eradication of the only Jewish state in the world. They have actually helped to prolong the war by convincing Hamas that they have support for in the West. And it's clear that by tolerating this, by appeasing it, by gaslighting the rest of us, the authorities have brought into being something that has pretty much obtained cult-like status. And the only way this is going to be ended, and the only way anti-Semitism is going to be reduced significantly, is through some sort of program of de-radicalization. And I don't even know if people have started to think about that yet.
You talk about a program. You'll probably be aware, more than most, how this is growing in so many university campuses, Mr. Silverman.
Well, we're dealing day in, day out with cries for help from both students and staff at universities who are being forced to do their work or their studies while listening to the chance for their death beat away. It's intolerable. Not just the universities, our regulators, our universities, our criminal justice system, our national broadcaster, all are complicit in what happened last week in Manchester through the actions and inaction on their part, and they should all be hanging their heads in shame.
Just lastly, to clarify, this would be the BBC's reluctance to still call Hamas what they are, which are a bunch of terrorists, rather than the militant group, which makes them sound like railway workers.
Indeed, but that's the least of it. I mean, they have actually amplified Hamas propaganda time and time again.
Grateful as ever for your time. Thank you, Stephen Silverman, your Director of Investigations and Enforcement of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Let's not beat about the bush here. These people they would like to see the destruction of Israel. There's no doubt about it. Some of it because they just loathe Israel. Some of it, sadly, because it is driven by anti-Semitism. They are closer now to peace than it has been for years. But you know those demonstrators will turn out because, to use Mr. Silverman's, it's almost like a cult-like status now in that. Also coming up after the news, the Princess of Wales has warned of the dangers of screen time for children. Head teacher Tony Plunkett thinks there are dangers of giving children smartphones.
They're still learning how to communicate effectively with their peers. By removing all of those and replacing it with the screen, we're not setting them up for successful communication.
And we'll have more on that after this. 9:15 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Israel's government's approved Donald Trump's Gaza plan for a ceasefire and hostage-prisoner exchange. The deal will see Israeli troops pull back to an agreed-upon line in the next 24 hours. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says European countries will be strongly playing their part in the peace process. LBC weather. Cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas. Some sunny spells later on. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Plaistow, Prince Regent Lane remains closed both ways following an accident. The investigation works are still taking place and there are delays back to the Barking Crossroads and also back to the A13. In Woolwich, the South Circular Road is partially blocked at the Woolwich Ferry roundabout, but you can now get to the ferry, so those ferry services have now resumed. In Penge, the High Street remains closed both ways and that's because of a fire. Slightly better news now in Purley. All the lanes are back open on the A23 Brighton Road at Purley Cross, but there are still southbound delays all the way back to Kenley. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are delayed by about 15 minutes between Marylebone and Gerrards Cross.
This is LBC.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience, helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World. We're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies, and ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The protests will continue, but of course, hopefully, this weekend will put them in a very different light. Andy's in Kentish Town. Andy, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Nice to talk to you.
Good to have you on, sir. What can you tell me?
So I'm kind of outraged, Nick, listening to the guy from the anti-Semitism campaign, because I've been on three of these marches. I have never heard that language.
Right.
I've heard such restraint from people.
Right.
I've heard criticism of the government of Israel, but I've never heard the words he's saying, ever. Three marches I've been on.
Right. You know that, have you ever heard From the River to the Sea?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yes.
I've heard it for years. I don't think it's anti-Semitic. I really don't.
Okay, but you know a lot of Jewish people think it is, because From the River to the Sea.
I know some Jewish. I think this is more about politics than it is about, you know, Jewish versus Muslim. I really do, yeah. I think right-wing people seem to think that. Left-wing people, I know left-wing people, Jewish people who don't think that.
Will you go on a demo tomorrow or in the coming weeks?
I hope to, yeah. I try to get there whenever I can, because I think it's outrageous.
What are you demonstrating for now?
Two-state solution is what I'd like.
Well,
you know, rights for both people. Yeah,
I've
never heard anybody trashing Israel as rights to exist. Never heard that.
Isn't that the ultimate goal of the 20-point peace plan, the two-state solution?
Well, we hope so, don't we? We really hope so.
So why would you... If that is slowly being worked through, and please God, the hostages are returned, the prisoners are returned, whatever else it might be, why do you still need to walk around London chanting From the River to the Sea?
Because, I guess, you know, it would be nice for Palestine to be free, wouldn't it? I mean, it's quite hard to...
Well, it's not going to happen overnight, but this council will go in, initially involving Sir Tony Blair and Palestinians, and that will then lead to some form of government, and Palestine then can develop, hopefully, democratic...
Really hope so, Nick. I really hope so, yeah. I really hope
but
so.
But how will chanting what many people find offensive and anti-Semitic slogans, how will that help the process, Andy?
Well, you know, there's a debate about that slogan. I've heard no anti-Semitic chanting on these marches
at all. No, you said that twice, yeah.
Well, it's really important, because people don't, you know, I hear so many people saying these are anti-Semitic marches. What I see is great restraint on these marches, very specific. You know, I learned maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago off my son to talk about the Israeli government, not the Israeli people, isn't it? Because it's the government our argument with. It's the government who destroyed Gaza.
Yes.
And it's not with the state of Israel. It's really not.
All right. Andy, thank you. Safe protesting if you decide to continue with it. William in Alloa. William, your view of these continued protests and protesters. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think a lot of these protesters are members of what I would call the gullible gang. And I think one of the things that the media ought to discuss, but they don't really discuss, is that a lot of the stuff that we see that comes out from the Middle East is propaganda on both sides. And in particular, a lot of the stuff that comes from Gaza, it's designed to get you to sympathise with their cause. And there was a report recently by a publication...
I would suggest... Any propaganda, that's the idea behind any propaganda, isn't it? That you
Yes. But in this case, the Palestinian side, the Gazan side, have won to a certain extent. And if you look at a publication called The Free Press, they published a story about how 12 of the most viral images coming out of Gaza to depict a famine are actually of children with pre-existing and complicated medical histories. And so they're not actually victims of an alleged famine. So I think the people protesting, they need to confront reality and realize that they have fallen hook, line and sinker for fakery, otherwise known as Gazawood or Pallywood propaganda, Nick.
All right. I have to say, I think both sides would be guilty of that. Both sides would have taken actions and will have put out missives, directions, direct declarations that probably are open to certain interpretation. So I wouldn't want anybody to think one side is particularly worse than the other. The one thing that we can possibly hope is that, as we say, we inch towards this exchange of the hostages being freed and, of course, the prisoners or hostages, whichever you want to call them, from Israel as well. We'll turn to that conversation in a moment. But one thing we can talk about with some certainty is the concern of the Princess of Wales warning of the dangers of screen time for children. She writes in an essay on the perils of modern life that family members should, and I'm now quoting the Princess, look the people you care about in the eye and be fully there, because that is where love begins. She adds, people live increasingly lonely lives, and I'll quote again, which research shows is toxic to human health, and it's our young people, which she deems to be 16 through 24, that report being the loneliest of all. If you are aged 16 to 24, that's awful to feel lonely at that age. It's awful to feel lonely at any age, of course. But that age when your life should just be beginning and you're finding out, and you're discovering boys or girls or both, I don't care. Maybe getting yourself a car or a motorbike, horse. Should have a bit of fun. Now, Prince William has discussed the use of children, or the use by children of phones. He's speaking here with Eugene Levy on that Apple TV Plus show, The Reluctant Traveller.
None of our children have any phones, which we're very strict about.
That is really interesting. So if your kids don't have phones to play with, what do they play with? What do they love doing?
So Louis loves the trampoline. So he's obsessed by trampolining. And actually, Charlotte does a lot as well. As far as I can tell, they just end up jumping up and down on the trampoline, beating each other up. Most of the time. Apparently there is an art to it. Charlotte does her netball as well and her ballet. And so keeping them busy with sports and just being outdoors is really important. They're trying to learn musical instruments. I'm not sure how successful we're being with that.
I mean, one has to say not everybody, of course, has the means to have a garden in which you can put a trampoline. But credit to the Prince, and that's great. But perhaps the reality is if you're living in an apartment block in a block of flats in Sunderland, it wouldn't be the same. Rory Cefflin-Jones, technology journalist, author of Always On, Hope and Fear in the Social Smartphone Era. Good to have you on, Rory. How do you respond to what we're hearing from Kate, the Princess of Wales? Good morning.
Well, it's quite dramatic language. Good morning, Nick. It is quite dramatic language from her, isn't it?
It is.
And I think this whole debate needs a bit of moderation. I'm sorry to be boring man in the middle. There are obvious concerns about smartphones and about screens in general and the amount of time we use them. And a lot of parents, says he, putting his hand up, are also not setting a very good example. Staring at their social media during mealtimes and so on. So we've all got to learn. We're all still on this learning journey. I don't think a complete ban is the right idea. It was a bit unclear from Prince William what he was saying there, because his children have not quite reached the age anyway when I think, you know, they should be getting smartphones. I think, how old is
George is 12, George? Charlotte is 10, Louis is 7. 12, 10 and 7, Rory.
So George is about getting there. But I think George is going to go to Eton, unless I'm much mistaken.
Yeah.
And I gather from a parent of someone at Eton that they are actually quite strict about phones. They allow them to have old-fashioned phones with buttons that they keep in a locker or something, and then. But I'm sure in the holidays, the kind of kids that go to Eton do have access to more sophisticated machines. But if you're saying a complete ban on any use of smartphones or screens until they're 16, that's obviously impractical and will be dangerous, I'd say, because they need to learn how to live in this modern world.
Rory, how do you determine what is too much time to be on your phone with your child as a parent?
Well, my kids are now grown up, so right. the damage is done. It's now looking at the grandkids who are already, you know, quite a young age, looking at their parents' phones from time to time. I think until they're 11 or 12, so certainly before secondary school, they should not have their own phones. That would be my rule.
How did you police it? Because you've been a journalist all your life. I've no idea of your wife or partner whether they're journalists or whatever, but you would have had to occasionally look at your phone because of the news agenda that you were on, Rory.
Well, I'm not saying I'm a model at all. In fact, my wife would tell you that I am, you know, the opposite of a model, that put your damn machine away while we're having dinner. I'm part of the generation that has fouled up, but now needs to sort of pass on that message that there are ways of doing it. It can be extremely rewarding. Yes. I wouldn't be speaking to you now but for my smartphone. But we've got to learn to live with it properly, and we've also, I think we've got a big I do talks in school sometimes.
Oh yeah.
And one of the most important things I think we've got to teach kids is where information comes from, how to tell the difference between what's fake and what's real, those are lessons that are going to be very important in their lives.
Rory, I will leave it there only for time reasons, and you know as well as I that I have to get to a news bulletin in a moment. Rory Coughlin-Jones, thank you, technology journalist. He wrote Always On, Hope and Fear in the Social Smartphone Era. So if you have children, or possibly grandchildren for that matter, how do you police the amount of time? What is the right amount of time? Or the other way of asking this, how much time is too much time to spend on your mobile phone? I'm sure we've all seen, and I think I've talked about this, possibly not on the show, but certainly on the ITV show this morning, we've talked about how you go into some restaurants and there's a family, let's say a family of four, none of whom are communicating with each other. And these are young children. They're all on their mobile phones. Well, why would you bother going to getting a table in a restaurant? There's absolutely no... Why aren't you looking around, hopefully engaging, talking about the food or whatever it might be? We'll pick up on that. Also, around half an hour ago, we might have an idea who's won the Nobel Peace Prize. Professor Henrik Sisar was a member of the Nobel Committee during President Trump's first time. And he was speaking on LBC yesterday saying Trump's ceasefire announcement this time has possibly been too close to the deadline.
It's important to remember that what happens within 48 hours of the announcement are probably things that the committee cannot fully take into consideration.
We'll give you an idea of the runners and riders, as it were, after the news. 9:30, listen to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Israel's cabinet has signed off President Trump's ceasefire plan, with fighting set to stop in Gaza by tomorrow morning. It'll see the release of the remaining hostages held by Hamas in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. The plan will also see a huge increase in the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. But many questions remain about the future of Hamas and the governance of the territory. The winner of the Nobel Peace Prize is set to be announced in about half an hour's time. Donald Trump, who is one of the 338 nominees, has repeatedly made it clear he would like the award. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, some sunny spells developing this afternoon, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC.
You know that feeling when your money's working for you? No? Well, make it! Open an investment account at XTB, make a deposit, and receive a free Uber stock worth £70.
£70?
That's right, £70 for free. If you like it, you can easily buy more stocks and ETFs with 0% commission. Join XTB and let your money work for you.
Capital at risk. Investments above €100,000 charged at 0.2% commission. FX fees may apply. Uber stock value based on 10th September and may fluctuate. Limited availability. T's and C's apply.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stuff Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right, Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Now, as you've already heard, it's Make Some Noise Day today here on LBC, and our sister stations such as Classic and Heart all raising money for great causes. And this is my opportunity to give you an idea of where the sort of organisations your money could go to. In the studio with me, keen soccer player. He looks a bit like a soccer player. He's got the right sort of haircut. And I've got, yeah, you've got a couple of tattoos. Yeah. You could be a soccer player. Young Ted Green, who's trainee community coach at ATF Southend. Ted, thanks for coming to the studios. What does ATF stand for?
It stands for Achieve Through Flourish, or Achievement Through Football.
And how does that work? Tell me a little bit about what you do.
So basically, we do a lot. We do a lot of community work where we'll do sports sessions. We've also got the Positive Future course, what I take part in, where it's an 8-week course. There's 8 of us, and we just say our real life experiences. So obviously, I talk about my story, like in my involvement in county lands at a young age, and going to jail, and then obviously how I come out of it.
Yeah. Do you mind just sharing a little bit of that? Because you were going down the wrong path. How old are you now, sport?
So me, I'm 20 now.
You're 20?
Yeah, I'm
20. You were going down the wrong path. Tell the listeners where it was all gone wrong, Ted.
Yeah, so basically, I was raised in an all-white family. Unfortunately, the people that adopted me, one was an alcoholic and one suffered with like mental health and things like that. And I used to get a lot of bullying because I used to be very naive. Like I just thought it was normal to be the only black child in a white family. So through the bullying, an argument broke out with my dad one time when he was drunk. And that's when I found out that I was actually adopted and my real parents' dad.
Right.
So finding this out, I just got angry at the world. I got angry at them and I ended up leaving home. Shortly after, I ended up getting picked up by a gang member. And yeah, that's how my County Lands story kind of began. So I used to get sent like places like Scotland, Manchester, Nottingham. And yeah, you're basically there with a bag of drugs. Unfortunately, in that lifestyle, you have to carry a knife as well. And you're living a crackhead's house, basically. Like, we used to call it a bando. You can live there up to weeks or months.
You called it a what?
A bando.
A bando.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And basically,
how many typically would be living in this house?
It would be you and the owner of the house, really.
All right. Okay.
And yeah, you're basically there for weeks or months until all the drugs are sold. And I just kept doing it in different places.
And were you earning yourself out of this? How were you funding yourself to live?
Yeah. When all the drugs are gone, they'd give you a cut of the money, so a couple £100 here and there. But unfortunately, that led to me going to jail at the age of 13 due to somebody being building up a drug debt with me.
Right.
And yeah, unfortunately, I ended up chasing him, and he ended up jumping over a fence, and unfortunately, he ended up passing. So I went to jail for manslaughter at the age of 13.
Right.
I done 2 years in Cockenwood, and that was an eye-opening experience, really. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm some bad man. Like, I'll be honest, I was scared.
Right.
I was scared when I first went, and I learned it was very gang-affiliated.
Right.
When I went in there, I learned that pretty quick, because on the first day, something as small as an apple in jail, like, that's how crazy it is, something as small as an apple. I got asked for an apple. I ended up giving it to him, and then my cellmate told me, like, I shouldn't have done that, basically.
What, it can kick off over an apple?
Yeah, and it did. I ended up getting in a fight over it. I won the fight, but I lost the war, because the next day when my cell got opened, I got beaten up badly, where they broke my jaw. Like, they broke my rib. Yeah, I got sent to hospital.
How old were you then?
I was 13 years old. Yeah, so by the second day of my sentence, I was in hospital. But then when I came back, like, from hospital, I learned, like, I had to, say who I was affiliated with and things like that. And, yeah, I done the rest of my sentence calm, but unfortunately, in there, I ended up making friends with, like, other gang members and things like that. So when I come out at 15, I got fostered by my nan and granddad.
All right.
Yeah, I moved to Medway in Kent.
Yep.
But I didn't really learn my lesson. I ended up building my own land, and I carried on doing what I was doing, basically, which led to a lot of things happening, like me being stabbed 3 times, being kidnapped, and my family getting hurt in the process as well. So yeah, it was all them things happening, as well as one of my friends dying. It was all them things happening as I was getting older. I was about 17, and I got arrested, and I had a conspiracy case that went on for 2 years, 4 county lands, where I got told I could serve up to 14 years right. in an adult jail. So hearing...
Is that when you realised things had to change?
Yeah, so hearing that is what made me realise, yeah, I need to change. So I ended up leaving. I ended up stealing a car, and I moved to Essex in Basildon. I was just living in a car for a few months, and luckily during that period, the conspiracy case got dropped.
Right.
And shortly after, I got caught for the car. Unfortunately, but luckily I didn't go to jail. They ended up putting me on youth offending, and then through youth offending is how I met ATF and
okay,
changed my life.
Because I was going to ask, how do we get from that extraordinary, and you're still only 20?
Yeah.
Whew, from that extraordinary background. So then it's through the youth offending program that you found ATF.
Yeah.
What has that provided for you?
It's provided me a lot. It's provided me counselling. I'm now housed. Like I now private rent my own flat. And it's given me a sense of belonging, basically. I'm surrounded by lovely people, all genuine people, and hopefully it's only up from here.
And this organisation, Positive Futures, helps as well, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Positive Futures, like, it's good to give back and know that I could be saving at least one child from falling into that lifestyle.
Let's talk a little bit about eight. So you're in South, based in Southend?
Yeah.
Okay. How many kids, what sort of ages are the kids? How many kids are involved?
From year 7 to year 11, basically. So we do some primary schools, but it's mainly secondary schools.
So it's broadly 11 through 18, roughly, 11 through 18, roughly?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
And, yeah, we'll get a group, like a class of kids, and, yeah, it's an 8-week course where one by one we'll give our story each week, and then afterwards we'll do some, like, boxing or football with them as a release. And Yeah.
So when you're in front of this group of children, what's the moment they tune in the most, you think, Ted? Or what are the, if you ever take questions, what do they want to know about?
More, the questions are normally like the realities of jail, because obviously there's a lot of movies and things like that, and people believe what they see on TV, but the reality is it's a bad place, really. Like, you see on social media, they talk about having Xboxes and things like that. Like, that's not true. Well, no. From my experience anyway, I never had no Xbox or PlayStation in jail, so, yeah.
Okay. What's your plan? You're going to stay... I think you're a community coach, is that right?
Yeah, I'm a community coach, and my plan's to build my portfolio and just keep helping the community, really, and maybe one day I can have my own ATF.
Oh, that'd be great. So people listen to a radio station like LBC and our sister stations. Why would you say it's important if they can afford it, they shouldn't give some money to an organisation like ATF? What would you and your colleagues do with it?
It'd probably go into funding to be able to help more kids, really, help more communities, because we're not only in Southend, we're all around, like, yes. Chelmsford, Basildon, like, all around Essex, so... Yeah, and, like, it's making a difference at the end of the day. Like, I've been approached in somewhere like Lidl just doing my shopping by a parent, and they've said, oh, like, you've helped my son come out and tell me that he's been approached by, like, gang members to get him involved in county lands. So, yeah, it feels really good.
All right. What position do you play in football?
I play centre mid.
So, I know you follow Liverpool. What player then would... Who plays the role that you play then? Not Salah. Are you Mo Salah?
I wish I was Mo Salah.
Not quite. Is he still playing for Liverpool?
Who would the player be
that would sort of have your role for the team that you play for?
He doesn't play in my position, but I'd probably say I'm like a Robertson.
Robertson. I'm like a Robertson. You have got the look, you know, with the earring and the tattoo. You have got the build of a football player.
Thank you.
Ted, thank you so much. Good luck with everything. An extraordinary story. I wish you nothing but good luck. Ted Green, thank you very much for coming in. I'm going to read this now. So let me lean across and shake your hand, because you're going to be let out. Okay. Good luck, fella.
Thank you. Really good meeting you.
Look after yourself, fella. Right, if you want to help charities like ATF Southend, who Ted's working with, you can donate now. To donate £40, £30 or £20, text LBC 40, LBC 30 or LBC 20 without a space to 70766. 100% of your donation will go to LBC's Make Some Noise. 16 and over only, please. Seek the bill payer's permission. Standard network charges can apply. T's and C's are at makesomenoise.com. So that once last time, LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20 without a space to 70766. 07766. Right, it is 9:41, so almost and exactly an hour ago, I set LBC's Henry Reilly a challenge at a busy junction in Holborn. He joins me again now. Remind the listeners what your challenge is, and of course, update us on the countdown. Morning again, Henry.
Good morning, Nick. I'm grateful this isn't a week-long investigation. Lots of ideas in your head. I'm at the junction of Gray's Inn Road and Theobald's Road. I'm right by the Yorkshire Grey pub, so it's quite a nice spot, actually. Unfortunately, it's not open at this time. I've seen people going past, one with a canvas painting, would you believe, going through the red lights, and another playing Depeche Mode, Enjoy the Silence, on a speaker at full volume. But the total, in fact, it's just gone up by one, there we go, 221 as we hit an hour. So if there's a £50 fine, you're looking at what, 11 grand in total. And I did get stopped, Nick, I have to say, by some LBC Nick Ferrari fans who were sort of asking me the total. One black cab driver and two people in a van. But there we go, 222 is the total as the clock strikes an hour.
And have there been moments, do they sort of do it surreptitiously, do they do it brazenly, is it a mix of both? How would you describe their behaviour, Henry?
It's crowd mentality. The collective noun is a peloton of cyclists. And you notice when one stops, they all tend to stop. But when one is brazen enough to go through, actually, you see a whole peloton of them going through, sometimes three, four, five at one time.
Safe journey back, Henry Reilly. Probably don't get on one of those line bikes. Henry Reilly, LBC's reporter, that we did this because the newspaper investigation looked at about 172. I thought it would be more, so we'll close it there at 221, 222, actually. Either side of that, that is the reality. So cyclists' ability to not see red makes the rest of us see red. And, of course, there is such danger in that. Let's come back to the conversation we were having before we help raise some money for Make Some Noise, which was about these protests that will continue, we are told, through this weekend, the pro-Palestinian demos. Danny's in Orpington. Danny, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. Well, yeah, a lot better. This cold is nearly gone, but frailty's not indulged. On you go.
Good. I'm not sure of the costs to the taxpayer that these marches
millions.
Are. One highlight of this was on last Saturday, a football match in London.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm allowed to say the team, I will.
Why not? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, at Millwall.
Right.
There was a hell of a lot of police dressed in a sort of olive green outfit. Looked like they were riot police. So I asked, you know, what are you expecting? A lot of trouble. And in a Northern Irish accent, he said, no. They've had to send us in from Northern Ireland, and I'm talking there was hundreds, about 100 of them.
Hang on, who was Millwall playing?
West Brom. So
right.
I said, what's the reason for you being here? And he said, all your lot are busy doing other stuff. So, I mean, we can't even police a football match. There wasn't any trouble there. There never is anymore. But, I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, and the cost, and also the chants at a football match. If you was to chant anything, anything like they're chanting on
the stewards marches, drag you out, don't they?
You'll have your ticket took off you for life. So
really,
you know, it's mad.
Your view then? That in a sense, hopefully, we're moving towards peace. We've spent millions of pounds policing these protests. Can we all now get on with the rest of our lives, Danny?
I would hope so. And also, one other thing is, who are these people that are marching? Where are they from? Are they mainly British, are they?
I'm sure if some people are on holiday or visiting, but yeah, no, they are mostly British people. Of course, a lot of them are going to have enormous sympathies for Palestine, and we can justify that, but I'm afraid much of it is driven by a hatred for Israel. And that's behind it. Danny, thank you for your call on that. We're going to give you an update on the Nobel Peace Prize. It's announced at around 15 minutes' time. But who are the runners and riders? You'll find out after this. 9:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Israeli government has approved President Trump's ceasefire plan for Gaza, with fighting set to stop by tomorrow morning. It'll see the release of the remaining hostages held by Hamas in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. And the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize will be announced just after 10 o'clock. LBC weather cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays in Plaistow because Prince Regent Lane remains closed both ways after an accident. The investigation works are still taking place. The South Circular Road's very busy at the Woolwich Ferry roundabout, and that was after an accident, but those restrictions, even though they're still in place, you can get to the Woolwich Ferry now, so that's back up and running. In Penge, the High Street remains closed after the fire that happened yesterday. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are disrupted. They're now delayed by about 20 minutes between Marylebone and Gerrards Cross, and that was after that incident earlier at West Ruislip. And LNER trains are running a reduced service to and from King's Cross today because of the engineering works.
This is LBC. Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over. Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
People ask me, what's my good place? Down the park, having fun with Toby, my cockapoo. And knowing that my pension with PensionBee is managed by experienced money managers. So, not chasing the stick then, Toby? No?
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
David in South Woodford, they're going to carry on protesting this weekend, should they? Good morning.
Yes, Nick. And the reason I say so is back in 2010, Netanyahu posted on video, and this is shown by Channel 10 of Israel TV, that he'd deliberately destroyed the Oslo Accord.
Right.
So
the protests, in your view, David, are purely anti-Israel, aren't they?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Why should that continue now if hopefully we are, and I really hope that I don't come to rue these words, we are moving towards the start of a process that might get us to a two-state solution? Why would you continue with the hatred towards Israel? What would that achieve, David?
It's not hatred, Nick, not at all.
You just said it was.
We've reached stage one, Nick. We want to go to stage two before anyone, especially Netanyahu, destroys it.
Right.
That is the issue.
And what is stage two? That is the two-state solution.
Well, ultimately, yes. Nick, we're going to have the same problem in a few years' time again because there's no Palestinian state. The sooner we have a Palestinian state, we can have a safe Israel, a safe Palestine.
Okay. But do you think everybody's saying that when they chant tomorrow? Because I don't. I'm afraid I think many do, but many aren't, and many just want to see the destruction of Israel, David.
Nick, I've been on these marches. There are many Jewish people, including Orthodox Jews, who've marched with me.
Yes, but you do accept there are many Jewish people who actually are quite fearful of these events, David.
Yes.
So I'll match your claim with another claim, and I don't know where that takes us.
Well, Nick, if it's fearful for Jews, why would Jews come on these marches?
Because there are around 300,000 people, Jewish people in this country. Not all of them are on those demonstrations by any stretch, David. A lot of them tell me that they're frightened to come into parts of London as a result of this. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not. I'm a Jewish man, but you have to be aware of that, David.
I am. And the Jews who are on the marches include the Orthodox Jews in the traditional
attire. You're going round in circles now. That doesn't, just because, and good luck to them, and if they get from it what they want, fantastic. But just because you see a few Orthodox Jews, I don't think you should run away with the idea that all Orthodox Jews think these demos. And equally, by the way, I'm not suggesting that every Jewish person is against the demos either. I'm sure a lot of them loathe intently what the Israeli government is doing. David, I must move on. Thank you for your input. We'll try and pick up on that. Now, in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to find out who's going to win the Nobel Peace Prize. And in a related conversation, I suppose, what I've just said with David, there is a school of thought that possibly President Trump might be in the run. Not, I would imagine, for this year, but for next. But it's very difficult to get an answer from the government as to whether they support it. Tony Blair tried to dodge the question. Sorry, Tony Blair, where did that come from? Keir Starmer tried to dodge the question yesterday, although we will see the return of Tony Blair, of course, into the Middle East. So I thought I'd have a go with Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper. Did I get an answer?
Nobody should be in any doubt about the significance of this moment. And we would not have got here without the US Peace Initiative, without the work that President Trump has done. A lot of countries have been involved in this, a crucial role played by countries like Qatar, but also many other countries from across the world. The UK has been involved alongside other countries in putting forward proposals for this 20-point plan, effectively, for this peace process over recent months. And a lot of countries will be involved in implementing it, but I think everyone recognises the crucial role that President Trump and the US have played to get us to this point. Now all of us have to make this work because we desperately need peace in the Middle East.
Let's try this another way. Would you support Donald Trump getting the Nobel Peace Prize?
So, look, I think I'm strongly supporting the work that President Trump
is
doing.
But this is a yes or no, Yvette Cooper.
You'll know it's an independent process. Nick, I'm not going to cut across process because I think we are actually about to have it making its announcements today. I think we're expecting imminent announcements from the Nobel Peace Prize. I can't. No, but I do strongly support the peace role that President Trump is playing, and I don't think anybody else could be playing that role right now, and we all need to recognise how important this is.
I don't know about your mood this morning, but mine was lifted considerably when I picked up my copy of the I newspaper, turned to page 9 and saw an article by one Matt Fry, who of course is my LBC colleague, Saturdays from 10 in the morning, Europe editor for Channel 4 News, and joins me now. Matt, what are you writing in the I today? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I made my case for Donald Trump to get the Nobel Peace Prize, which sharp in check of breath from my colleagues in many places.
I can imagine.
And I think, and of course, you know, I wonder if he's already up at 5 o'clock in the morning waiting for that phone to ring, and he might be disappointed if it doesn't, bitterly disappointed. I mean, the problem, Nick, is that apparently the Nobel Peace Prize that was given now, today, will be given on the achievements of the previous year when Trump wasn't even in office.
Yeah.
But let's move that rule to one side for a moment. I think, to be honest, whatever you say about Donald Trump, and he doesn't normally talk fluent peace or fluent diplomacy, let's be clear, whatever you think about him, if it hadn't been for his juggernaut-like intervention in recent weeks, we would not be seeing the ceasefire today. I think that is absolutely clear. Of course, the Qataris were involved, and the Egyptians, and the United Arab Emirates, also very importantly, and they deserve a nod, and maybe it could be a collective prize, which I'm sure Donald Trump would absolutely hate, because he wants it all to be about him. But I think if he hadn't deployed the Trump juggernaut, we wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing today.
How nervous are you? And let's hope you're right. Let's hope we move, and it's a positive weekend on all sides. How nervous are you of a sort of Beirut-style vacuum of power that could be created here, Matt?
Oh, totally. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what some members of the Israeli government are planning. Some kind of, you know, divide and rule has been the modus operandi of Prime Minister Netanyahu forever. And, you know, you've got to be so careful. Remember the Oslo Accords. Guess who got the Nobel Peace Prize for that? It was Yitzhak Rabin, the Israeli Prime Minister at the time, and Yasser Arafat, the head of the PLO. The latter died in his bed, and the former was assassinated by an extremist right-wing Israeli settler. So I think, you know, there are so many roadblocks on the way. But I would say to Donald Trump, if he gets this prize, dear Donald J. Trump, please make sure that this time round there's a little bit of follow-up. So make sure that, you know, the ceasefire isn't broken again by the Israelis, or indeed by by Hamas, if they still exist, make sure that there is a reconstruction plan. And to some extent, the guarantees for that, some guarantees for that, are built into his 20-point plan. So we're going to have fairly quickly Egyptian, Qatari, Turkish forces on the ground in Gaza. Well, the Israelis are not going to bomb them without getting away with it.
Lastly, busy watch for you tomorrow here on LBC, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've really called him. He's going to come on the programme when he gets the prize. And we're going to have a little bit of a sort of ego management session. And if he doesn't get the prize, we'll have a therapy session. And you know what it's like.
Who better at the helm if the momentous events do take place tomorrow than Matt Fry? He's here on this radio station, LBC, tomorrow morning from 10. Matt, thank you. Also, of course, Europe editor for Channel 4 News, and he will take you through those events. And it could be very, very momentous events indeed. We're also going to have protests tomorrow. Caroline in Finchley, they won't go away. Do you think they should now give it a rest, as it were? Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Nick. I just had to call up because I am fed up, and I have heard probably over 200 times over the last year of pro-Palestinian marchers calling up and trying to justify their hate for Jews and their from the river to the sea and globalise the intifada by saying that there's loads of Jews on these marches. And I have said that so many times, and it is the tiniest, tiniest percentage. I can tell you, the vast majority of Jews are absolutely horrified by these marches, horrified. For 2 years, people have been able to scream out this globalised intifada by saying it means
too?
Something else when we know it doesn't.
Are people threatened as well, would you say, Caroline?
100% threatened. And can I say, I'm not sorry to say this, but it's the likes of James O'Brien and Lewis.
Well, no, hang on, no, I'm not going to let that go, James, because I wouldn't imagine he'd let me speak. So let's just broaden it out. What do you hope comes from this weekend, Caroline?
From the marches,
from this weekend, as regards the work that Donald Trump appears to have done. What do you hope comes?
Oh my gosh! No, of course, absolutely. We've been horrified by everything that's been happening. Been horrified seeing what's been happening to the Palestinians. We want peace and love, and I'm afraid the pro-Palestinians just want to hate and smear and kill the Jews, and therefore I'm just fed up of them saying that it's a small pocket of
You made that point, and I absolutely hear what you say, and it's not. And I think what we have to take, of course, is your concern as well, the safety for your safety and safety of other Jewish people. Caroline, thanks for your input on that. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on Catch Up on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news categories in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done for another week, actually. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Oh, no, is she gone? Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where attention turns inevitably back to the situation in the Middle East. And I'm afraid, I mean, 2 hours yesterday, but I don't think anybody landed a punch on the idea that this could have happened with anybody other than Donald Trump in the White House. Some people struggling to accept the simple truth of that. But let's move on. Let's work on the presumption, and it may be a little naive. Eyewitnesses telling the BBC that attacks continued in Gaza overnight, but let's work upon the optimistic premise that the peace holds, that the ceasefire sustains. What has changed and what has been achieved?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, troops have begun withdrawing from parts of Gaza after the Israeli government approved a ceasefire deal. An exchange of Israeli hostages and hundreds of Palestinian prisoners is expected to take place in the coming days. Blake Sifton is LBC's correspondent in Tel Aviv. He says the ceasefire itself hasn't taken effect yet.
We have seen more shelling today in Gaza. There's been reports of tank fire as well as gunfire. But we are seeing the withdrawal of Israeli forces. Now, they're meant to withdraw within 24 hours of the approval by the Israeli government, with Israeli forces remaining in a little over half of the territory in Gaza.
The winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize will be revealed in the next few minutes. The announcement's been overshadowed by Donald Trump's campaign to win the award. There are more than 300 nominees. The leader of Plaid Cymru will say he is ready to replace Labour in the Senedd next year. Rhun ap Iorwerth is due to give his address to the party's conference in Swansea this afternoon. Crowds are lining the streets of Manchester for the funeral procession for Ricky Hatton, the former boxing world champion, died last month, aged 46. And it is Global's Make Some Noise Day. All of our stations, including Capital, Radio X and Classic FM, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like Ben, who's faced mental health issues and homelessness after spending much of his life in foster care. He's been helped by Bridge for Young People, funded by Global's Make Some Noise, which offered him support and a place to live.
I've actually enjoyed living at the charity. Obviously, my anxiety and depression not going to go away anytime soon. But they helped me get some therapies. I had time to talk.
And thank you, because so far you've helped us to raise £2,292,043. And in just the last couple of minutes, the winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize has been named as Maria Corina Machado, the de facto leader of Venezuela's opposition. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 95.09, that is down 13. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
LBC's Make Some Noise Day.
Right now, across the country, there are so many people going through unimaginably difficult times. Our official charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support those people facing life's toughest challenges. One of the people who has already benefited from your donations is Danny, who spent months in hospital with her young son, Nuno, after he was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia. They've been supported by George's Rock Stars, a charity offering music therapy to young children enduring long stays in hospital.
Nuno's the youngest of four, and we had him, and he was just quite perfect. And then when he was 8 months old, he became not very well, and that's when we ended up bringing him up to A&E, and they admitted him. And then we spent 5 weeks in hospital having every test under the sun. It must have just been terrifying for him, really. And as parents, you just have this huge sense of helplessness, but also guilt, because he'd look at you and be like, help. But we were in hospital by this point, and we knew that we were going to be in hospital for all four rounds of chemo back to back. So yeah, it was quite tricky entertaining an 8-month-old in a hospital room. And I used to see Louise around and used to see the blue cage with all the musical instruments in it, and sometimes you would hear things. I remember thinking, music therapy, like, really? And then one day Louise asked if she could come in, and literally it was verging on life-changing, because she just sang and he was like reaching out for the guitar, and like he was watching everything she was doing, and it was like, this is the happiest we've seen him in anything for months. So yeah, that was a turning point for me there. It was like, oh yeah, I get music therapy now, this is good.
Make Some Noise supports families like Danny and Nuno by funding music therapists to support young children enduring long stays in hospital. And they wouldn't get that help if it wasn't for your generosity. £20 could mean that another child in hospital like Nuno could have half an hour of music therapy, bringing some much-needed distraction and happiness into their day. To donate £30, £20 or £10, text LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 without a space to 70766. That's LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 to 70766. 6. 100% of your donation will go to LBC's Make Some Noise. 16 and over only. Please seek bill payers' permission. Standard network charges may apply. Terms and conditions are at makesomenoise.com. So text LBC 30, LBC 20 or LBC 10, no spaces, to 70766.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
...10.06 is the time. Congratulations to Maria Corina Machado, the winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize. It could be Donald Trump next year. My understanding of how this scheme works, how this prize works, is that it is unlikely to take into account more recent events. I thought it only took into account events from 2024, because the nominations, I thought, had to be in by January of 2025, which would have been very tricky for Donald Trump to be included. But it may be a little more nuanced than that. However, it was always close to impossible that something that is yet to be enacted could lead to an actual award. But who here has any faith in the old rules of what's possible and impossible? Hands up if you've still got faith in the old order and its ability to resist sweeping and violent assaults upon everything from the rule of law to simple tradition. I don't know how this reaches your ears. I really don't. I hope I've established over the last few years two things. Number one, that I've been completely right about everything that Donald Trump is and would do. And number two, that I have very little competition when it comes to holding him in the lowest imaginable regard. But I in the course of yesterday's programme, I kind of found myself thinking that his toxic character is intrinsic to this ceasefire. I mean, you know, whether or not the enormous bribe of a jumbo jet was a significant factor in the process of him deciding to become the first president in history to essentially pull the rug from beneath of the feet of the Israeli prime minister and tell him that his desire to continue this war ad infinitum was now toast, was now over. And nobody else could have done that, because there's a brilliant piece in the Times today by a journalist called Catherine Philp that I cannot recommend highly enough. I was going to share it earlier, but if I'd shared it, I'd have got a dozen messages going, do you know it's behind a paywall? To which I can't reply individually going, no, I had no idea it was oh, really? Journalists are getting paid for journalism. Well, whatever will it end? But it's a brilliant piece. Not least because it points out that the deal as it stands was pretty much on the table 18 months ago, but there was no way that Netanyahu was going to sign it, and there was no way, and this is really crucial, and this is why those of us who can see Donald Trump for precisely what he is, a self-confessed sex offender, serial felon, dangerous liar, inspirer of armed insurrection against